Kenny. Est-ce qu'il fallait?
This is Booker T, the five-time WCW champion, and you're listening to SNS Radio Network.
Yo, monkeys, it's me, TPP, the king of Bada Bing, the master of the diamond cutter, the three-time world champion. And you, well, you monkey, you're listening on the SNS Network. Stay tuned or you will feel bad.
Big Daddy Cool, Diesel, / Kevin Nash. You're listening on the SNS Radio Network.
Hey, this is Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle from TNA, and you're listening on the SNS Radio Network. Oh, it's real. It's damn real.
This is Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels, Mr. Hall of Fame, 2011, and you are listening on SNS Radio Network. See ya, and I wouldn't want to be here.
Hey, you listen on the SNS Network, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
The world is listening.
Welcome to the Whole Andy Show. Your dedicated home for all things Andy in the world of professional wrestling and sports entertainment.
When I say, I mean what I mean, I say, and they become anthems.
I told you, if you let me out of my cage, I'm gonna pile the bodies to the sky.
They just gave me a live mic on pay-per-view. So, if you all don't mind, I'd like to get a few things off my chest.
My name is Kevin Steen. And fuck Ring of Honor!
Fuck you, you're wrong. Fuck you, we're right. Because you have all made it to the dance. Because believe me, this is the dance.
With your hosts, Ashley is my name.
You ripped out my heart! You took everything I believed in, and you flushed it down the damn toilet. You flushed my heart. You flushed my soul. And now it sickens me to sit back and see other people making the same mistake.
And the Sun City Savior, Randy McWilliams.
There are so many amendments in the Constitution of the United States of America. But I plead fifth. 1, 2, 3, 4. Fifth.
Welcome, one and all, to another episode of the Whole Indie Show. Right here on the SNS Radio Network. I'm Ashley. I'm kind of still recovering from Eurogamer, but we're going to power through this. And I'm going to power through it so much that not only is Randy back this week. Randy, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Different laptop, because mine is pretty much, how do I say this, fucked. But either way, I am now able to somehow do this show again. And hopefully there's not more deja vu with the laptop issues, because that's happened way too many times for this to count, even going back to the old regime.
Yes.
And which inadvertently led to this now. So.
Not only Randy is here, but because it was touch and go whether I was going to make it, Sandro was also going to be in, and we've decided to let Sandro stay. So it's ironic we're going to be talking Kings of Trios tonight.
Yeah, that is, now that I think about it.
But Sandro, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, for a second there, actually, I thought you were going to try to introduce the show in Spanish again.
No. Considering how that... Nobody gave any comments positively or negatively about how that did, so I don't know. But we'll start off with the news, and actually there's quite a lot of indie stuff that we need to cover. First one I want to touch and get your guys' thoughts on is the news that TNA talent has basically been restricted from doing their stuff. The story is that they're now not allowed to work indie shows where those shows are broadcast on any kind of DVD. The previous deal that they had was they could appear on indie shows, but even if they were on DVD, but they couldn't be sold in like a third-party shop like Best Buy or Walmart or things like that. If they were sold from directly from the company themselves, it was okay. As of last week, that rule has been totally thrown out. So basically that makes TNA talent even more TNA talent rather than working the indie shows. Your thoughts on that, Randy?
I don't know. This just seems to be a trend with TNA where all of a sudden they decide not to have so-and-so wrestler or wrestlers wrestle for this company. ROH has gone through this many times with TNA over the past. Although, one, they did have good reason to, but that's kind of, that's another story for another time. Well, we already talked about it on another show, so you can get the archive on that. But yeah, the whole with Chavo getting taken out of NSPW down in Canada, apparently him and I think El Generico were set to have a match. Ended up becoming El Generico and Player Dos, and then Chavo was like, I didn't know this would happen. They should have. And one of the comments he made was funny. Well, something his dad said to Chavo Classic, but one I remember he put like, why did they put this on DVD? Or he never knew they were going to put this on DVD. Why would they do that? And then again, it makes you wonder, why wouldn't they? Because they're an indie company, and that's pretty much the number one way they make fucking money. Is through DVD sales.
Mm.
So it's one that's really going to affect... Well, I can't think of... excuse me. Any indie company that does use TNA talent, like PWG, really doesn't anymore. ROH, oh, well, yeah, they don't. They really can't now. So this will affect... Supposing there was that Chikara relationship that I feel really did it happen. It was just Jigsaw working with them. But we'll see what happens with that. But I don't think it will affect the indies too greatly. It's just the name, the marquee names that who were working on there. And if they did mean something, that promotion, it will affect them. But otherwise, this should be just business as usual.
Yeah. Sandro, your take.
Well, Randy pretty much said what was necessary about this, but to me, I really don't see this going on for a long time. I mean, it happened before a few years ago, and that probably lasted for about maybe 2 years or so, somewhere around there. And then, if you remember, TNA then decided to allow some of their talent to appear on some of the indie shows, like The Machine Gun, Samoa Joe, Homicide. They made their way back to the indie scene. It was for a short while, but just like before, I don't see this lasting for long. The only person that I think will be affected, as far as I know, on the TNA roster would probably have to be the current ex-champ, Zion. As far as I know, he's pretty much the one that does the indie shows. So this would pretty much just affect him. And like I said, it won't last long.
Has he been showing? Sorry to cut you out there. Has he been shown in AIW recently? Because I know they had to vacate the title off him due to him not showing up, and this was beforehand, and he made an appearance at the show after the JT Lightning Memorial show. I don't know if he's made any other since then, but if he had.
I'm not sure. Let me just check.
But while you're checking that, my thoughts is really it makes sense as a business point because TNA wants to protect the access that their talent has. Well, not the accent that they have, but the access other people have to their talent and using their name to try and promote themselves. But then I think it kind of possibly hurts some of the talent, which may not be used that much currently on the main show. It might be on Explosion a lot, but it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of approach.
Yeah, really. we might see some releases from this. And just looking it up for, apparently Ion did IWC show very recently, a promotion in the Pennsylvania area. And the AIW show is Absolution 6, or excuse me, Absolution 7, not the JT Lightning Memorial. But other than that, he's been mostly TNA.
Yeah, he's still on the roster page for AIW, but he's not listed as a current champion, though.
Mm. Yeah, he ended up, he lost the title because of that. But yeah, I'll probably be off that very soon.
Yeah. Well, speaking of releases, we might as well talk about this and the fact that Ring of Honor's had quite a few in the last couple of weeks. Which I think Sandro is in the shape of TJ Perkins and the Young Bucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The TJ Perkins was kind of, well, I don't know if it was unexpected or expected to happen. I'm not sure if he was used in the recent TV tapings. But he hasn't been used in quite a while. And the Young Bucks, that was a bit of a surprise. Not really sure what happened there, but all three of them are gone.
I think it has to do with, because those were the two earlier in the summer that they had announced, or excuse me, the three of them that they announced earlier in the summer wouldn't be showing up for their summer tapings, or they had the summer off, which I believe was due to the fact that they had to fly men from Cali. I know the Young Bucks especially, and I believe Perkins is living in Cali again. And which probably led to their releases, because Perkins really, oh no, it's very weird with Perkins, who's a very accomplished wrestler, but he just seems to float around promotions. He goes in and out of promotions, and then The Young Bucks, they won't lose anything out of it. They're the current Chikara Campeones de Parejas, so there's that. They'll probably end up, I wouldn't be surprised if they end up in Gabe Land. Especially they were working DGUSA in the past, so more than likely they're going to end up there.
Yeah, I kind of pitched that to Gabe on Facebook, and hopefully it'll happen.
Well, it depends on who some wrestlers, some people he does listen to, and some people he doesn't. Looking at Aaron Epic and ACH.
Well, I think it would be a mistake if he didn't book them, because, I mean, if you add them, it would... It will build up their tag team division in DGUSA.
Which they're looking to actually build up now, especially from that last show. Last show I did see, which was, can't think of it off the bat now.
The anniversary the one, show?
Yeah, oh, there we go. Yeah, Enter the Dragon.
Yeah.
Another bit of... Oh, go ahead.
No, sorry to interrupt you, but I should point out... when Perkins did the tryout for TNA, he actually went to his old persona, Puma. He actually did the tryout with the mask gimmick.
But yeah, he's been Puma for a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. But so far he hasn't been called up.
TNA likes masks. Look what happened to Sangriento.
Well, he's been Puma before in TNA, but yeah, that Sangriento thing should. I still don't know what the fuck they were thinking. Oh, well, yeah, we do know what they were thinking. Let's rip off Sin Cara.
Yeah, but the keynote is Sangriento didn't botch as much.
True, but it was the Amazing Red who they never do shit for. Or at least they do for a minute and then...
It's the curse of Don West. Again.
I remember I made a comment of a couple years back on SNS that even Don West couldn't sell Amazing Red.
Yep.
Which Amazing Red's a talented competitor, but zero charisma. Or at least promo what? I'd say zero promo skills. Charisma, maybe not so much, but
yeah,
nonetheless.
Well, he is running his House of Glory training school here in New York, and he's running shows as well, so he's kind of busy.
Yeah.
And then another story I'll bring up now, and then I'll probably bring up the rest when we come around again, because I want to get the other guys' indie news first before a couple of these interesting big wrestling stories, is the fact that Sarah Del Rey and Pac are now all but confirmed in WWE working in developmental. Pac as a wrestler, and although it doesn't make sense in some respects, but it makes more sense that it's actually happening, Sarah Del Rey is going to be a trainer, which, as much as I'd like to see her wrestle, I'd like to see her train the other wrestlers to be the other diva wrestlers to be better. But the only thing is, I don't think Pac is going to be able to do his kind of moves, is he, in WWE?
It's going to be toned down greatly because he's not. Excuse me. The thing with Pac is, it's not so much his moves are, well, he's just very crisp at what he does, regardless of the danger of the move. Like, I really don't see, you rarely see his moves really look botchy or say, or, well, I don't really want to use Sin Cara this, but like a Sin Cara, it's really fluid. But yeah, his moveset, because I could see maybe the British Airways getting allowed, but I don't think the 630 will.
Your thoughts, Sandra?
Well, first off, let me just start off with Sarah Del Rey. To me personally, I would prefer her being a trainer rather than wrestling in the ring, because let's face it, with the current lack of a diva division, most likely look like crap, and it will make her look bad in front of the WWE audience. And I would just prefer her as a non-wrestling role, and I think this will be fine. Not really sure how long this, as far as the trainers, how long that will last on the NXT television show. But it'll be interesting to see. As far as the Pac situation, I pretty much agree with what Randy said. I think some half of his movesets will be cut out, but I think we'll see somewhat of a, pretty much the non-flashy move that he does, we'll probably see it. I do think we'll see the shooting star press from him. As far as the 316 shooting star, I would say that could be pulled off, but maybe during a big show like a WrestleMania, for example. Maybe to put it off there. But I think he'll fit in well. I mean, the guy is just he's ripped. I mean, when he started, he was just a skinny kid. And during his stay in Japan, he is bulked up. He's fit. He's quick. He can go. He'll fit fine. Obviously, they'll give him a new name and a gimmick, obviously. And, you know, that's expected. But, you know, as long as we see him on TV, I'm fine with it. So I'm looking forward to it.
And then he'll probably get paired up with Kofi Kingston and the tag team Jamaican Me High.
Well, speaking of Bourne, apparently he won't be back for a while. Apparently till early 2013.
He's going to turn up at the Royal Rumble.
Probably.
Do a line of coke on the rope.
What is his injury again? Because I thought this was a
broken foot.
Oh. Oh, I thought it was an ankle.
That's going to take a while to heal.
Oh, boy. Best of luck to him.
And I know it's been like, just these past 2 years have just been crap, considering, especially in 2010, he was really starting to kind of break out. And then 11, he had the tag title run, and just the suspensions kept killing him. And the injuries as well, not just all the getting high, but yeah. It's just not turned out well for Bourne for a while, and it sucks.
Well, that's on him. He got caught. He should have.
Well, yeah, the suspension's why, yeah, I do agree with that. But injury-wise, like, that just really almost put a nail in his coffin that's seemingly just imminently about to be sealed.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'll come back with a few more stories, but Sandra, I believe you got one story which was given to us by L-Train with regards to a little benefit show that's happening as we are recording this past Sunday.
This past week, Willie Mack, who usually wrestles for Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, made an announcement that he's having a benefit show. It's going to be for his dad's funeral service, his father, Futz, who passed away recently. The show's going to take place in the Huntington Park, California area. Apparently, every SoCal indie promotion is going to be a part of it. It should be a very fun show, and it's for a good cause. It's taking place right now as we speak. At the next show, we'll probably give out the results and information of what went down at the show.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see who turns up with that, because there's a lot of possible PWG talent that could do that. Be interested to see if Joey Ryan's there as well, given that he's been busy over the last week or so.
Yeah.
But what other stories have you got, Sandra?
Well, I just got a few news from Mexico and Japan. I'll start off with Mexico and CMLL. Prince Devitt, he recently lost his NWA middleweight title to Dragon Rojo Jr. at last Friday's Arena Mexico show. I actually saw the match last night on CMLL TV. It was a pretty decent match. Seems like they're trying to push Dragon Rojo now that he's a double champion. And last news for Mexico, apparently New Japan's Tama Tonga, he's going to wrestle for the promotion starting October 12th. For those that don't know, Tonga, he's actually the son of Haku. So he's a second generation. He's been wrestling for New Japan for the last 2 or 3 years. He's a decent wrestler, and his style should fit in well with the lucha style in Mexico.
I was wondering about who Tama Tonga was, because it seemed like he was related to somebody in the wrestling business, mostly, as we found out, the Inouyes, or the majority of the Samoans in wrestling. And I also need to check out that Devitt Rojo match.
Just as long as...
Especially now, it's out.
Just as long as Tommy Tonga doesn't tag team with Chili Chowder.
You know, it's kind of funny because Tonga's attire. When you first see him, you would think he's related to Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he has the cheetah print tights. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right. Snuka.
Yeah, that's what you think when you first see him. Like, hey, is he the son of Jimmy Snuka? All right.
I'm just thinking with that. That probably, you know, let's cue the music. Super, super. Oh, sorry, I pressed the wrong one.
We thought you looked like this other guy.
Yeah, I didn't mean it. Yeah, we get $10.
Okay, on to Japanese news. Let's start off with the All Japan first. Just somewhat of an update on this rumored All Japan WWE relationship. Apparently, there's not much to report. According to The Observer, reports say that the All Japan officials took John Laurinaitis out to dinner after one of the WWE shows in Tokyo back in August. and pitched the idea for the working relationship. However, by this point, Laurinaitis had already lost most of his power within the company. So this will pretty much, this relationship will not happen. And that should just kill this rumor.
So pretty much, they paid him to come over for a meal, and he just got drunk on their tap. Yes! I love it.
I wonder if Laurinaitis was thinking, like, should I tell him that I don't have the power anymore? He's like, nah, fuck it, more sake.
They love the drink, so pretty much. Okay, on to Dragon Gate news. A little bit of update on Shima. Apparently, there was no information on what caused him to be hospitalized after the last pay-per-view. He was released after that. He did wrestle one house show after he was released. But then he was pulled for the next show due to his back that was lacerated that he suffered at the pay-per-view. Then a few days later, it was reported that he suffered a cut to his back while vacationing in Thailand this past week, which required another hospital trip. But so far, he's made a full recovery, and he's now doing fine. So it's good to know that it was nothing serious.
Yeah, very good to hear. Because I was kind of worried about what happened, considering the previous report we had just said he was rushed to hospital.
Yeah.
Kind of worrying that they don't know what it was, but at least he's getting better.
Yeah, and now I just want to get the results from the Dragon Gate show that happened earlier today in Japan with two DGUSA stars that officially started with the company in Japan. Johnny Gargano, he defended his Open the Freedom Gate title, defeating Ryo Jimmy Saito with a Gargano escape at 18 minutes. So that was a successful defense for Gargano. And in the main event, the current Open the United Gate Tag Team Champions, Shima and AR Fox, defeated the team of Naruki Doi and Masato Yoshino, a.k.a. Speed Bustle, at 18 minutes with Shima pinning Doi. And they're pretty much going to stay for the rest of the tour for the month of October. It's unknown if Gargano and Fox are going to defend their titles during the rest of their stay. And last but not least, we'll end up with New Japan. Tomorrow, New Japan will have another pay-per-view, the King of Pro Wrestling pay-per-view. But this is very interesting because not only will this be a pay-per-view in Japan, but this will also be a iPay-per-view for the rest of the world. So now you can watch a pay-per-view from New Japan. The iPay-per-view will be available on Ustream, and the price for this iPay-per-view is $25.
Ustream charges now. Oh my god.
Or at least for that excuse me, for that pay-per-view.
Yeah, so obviously if you live in the East Coast, I'm pretty sure the show would start about maybe 3 or 4 a.m. But the good thing is, from what I heard, once the show is done, the archive will be up immediately. So if you want to watch it once you wake up, you know, in the morning, you can. Just want to run down the card and just give me your opinions of the match that you're interested in. The first match is Manabu Nakanishi, Yuji Nagata, and Strongman taking on Toru Yano, Takashi Iizuka, and Tomohiro Ishii. The second match is for the IWGP Junior Tag Team titles. The defending champions, Rocky Romero and Alex Kozlov, will take on the team of Kushida and Alex Shelley.
Nice. Oh, the Time Splitters. That's their new name. I haven't seen them tag yet, but I heard that they are a tag team now using the I-95 as a finisher, which is the sheer new powerbomb combo that, or actually I should say slice bread, so that's what he calls slice bread number two powerbomb combo that the Machine Guns used as, I believe, Made in Detroit was what they called it.
Nice. The third match is for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title as Kota Ibushi will take on, once again, Low Ki. The fourth match is the is for the IWGP Tag Team titles as Hiroshi Tenzan and Satoshi Kojima defend the titles against Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith Jr., who you might know as Harry Smith.
I don't know if they'll go over in the match, but they'll be popular with the guys over there, the fans, certainly.
Yeah, this will be very interesting to see what happens. If you don't know, they changed his name to Davey Boy Smith Jr. because the head honchos at New Japan, they wanted their fans to realize this is the son of the British Bulldog. And obviously with Harry Smith, I guess they thought that it was going to go over, so they just changed his name. The next match is a former No Limit tag team partners going at it. Tatsuya Naito taking on Yujiro Takahashi.
Have they ever faced off since they split up last year?
I believe they did a couple of times. Most of the times it was just like 6-man or 8-man matches. But the interesting thing is that Naito is actually injured. From what I heard, he has a torn ACL, and he's trying to work through it. So we'll see if he actually gets passed through this match, because he wants to hold off the surgery. From what I heard, the offices, they want him for the Wrestle Kingdom show next year at the Tokyo Dome. And with a few months away, especially with this injury, it's pretty interesting to see if he'll pass by. But we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, because Naito's one of the... He's really kind of up and coming. Like, I'm surprised he hasn't held the belt yet or isn't the next in line to hold it, but they decided to go back to Tanahashi.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see, but, you know, if he gets hurt really badly in this match or within the next few months, he'll be out for a very long time. He'll probably be out with maybe 8 months or so, and that will probably kill the booking if they plan to push him for the title scene. We'll see.
Yeah, it's tough times looking there for Naito.
Mm-hmm. The next match is a tag team match with Togi Makabe and Wataru Inoni taking on the team of Kazushi Sakuraba and Katsuyori Shibata. This is a match I'm actually looking forward to because Sakuraba and Shibata, they actually started with New Japan, but they actually left to continue for a MMA career. And Sakuraba is actually the most well-known MMA fighters in Japan. He's being known as the Gracie Killer. As anytime he's fought any one of the members of the Gracie family, he pretty much destroys them.
Like most Japanese people tend to do. Just look at how the Kimura was made.
Exactly. And Shibata, you know, he was actually supposed to be one of the next top aces for the company, along with Nakamura and Tanahashi, but he left to pursue an MMA career. And now he's back to...
Yeah, maybe he should have stayed, considering Tanahashi is the ace of the promotion and Nakamura is easily the top heel. Would he be the top heel? Yeah, him or Okada, even though Nakamura and Yano lead Chaos, so yeah. He would have been in fine company had he stayed.
Yeah. The next match is actually pretty interesting because this is for Okada's contract. His contract is on the line in this match.
Money in the Bank match.
Yes. Kazuchika Okada will defend his briefcase and his contract against Carl Anderson. And this is obviously a rematch from the G1 Climax Finals back in August. So it should be a fun match. Next up is for the IWGP Intercontinental title as Shinsuke Nakamura defends his title against the former champion Hiroki Goto. And the main event is for the IWGP World Heavyweight title as Hiroshi Tanahashi defends his title against Minoru Suzuki. another rematch from this past year's Tokyo Dome show back in January. And that's all the news I have.
On paper, that looks like it could be an interesting card. I don't know about, having to charge somebody $25 for Ustream, though.
Yeah, it's a bit steep, but I'm pretty sure once the footage gets out, I'm pretty sure this will be uploaded on Daily Motion.
Yeah. So we'll actually see New Japan stuff in time, or not like 2 months away.
Well, no, it's just the fact that I don't know the reliability of Ustream.
Well, I'd imagine it's like any stream provider, pretty much. Any dangers you have with that?
Well, I don't think there'll be much of an issue because for people outside of Japan, like if you live in the States, as I said, it will probably be on like around 3 or 4 a.m. if you live in the East Coast. I'm pretty sure nobody's going to wake up that early to watch it unless there's the diehards that actually want to wake up that early and watch it.
Or they'll have shit to do the next day.
Exactly. But I don't see any issue in this one. If there is, I'll be very surprised. But we'll see what happens. And as I said, once the show ends, they will put the archive up immediately. Uh-huh. So it's up to you if you want to watch the Ustream version or just wait until you see the footage online.
I think we know. Do we pay $25 or just wait until it gets illegally for free? I'll take the latter.
Yeah.
Randy, have you got any stories?
No, not really. I don't have anything really a mention that I can think of.
Okay, well, so I'll jump into the... Well, one story that I've just noticed here, because I had a look through the New Japan iPay-per-view card myself, is one that I didn't have on my paper, but we might as well talk about, and that's Mr. Batista.
This past weekend,
he had his debut MMA fight, which was not against who he was originally supposed to fight due to some arrest or some issue. And the guy he faced in this fight, he beat in the first round. And some people have been very critical of the fight, but keep in mind, this is the first... Brock Lesnar wasn't that good when he had his first MMA fight in UFC. Well, it wasn't even there. Didn't he have fights, like MMA fights in Japan?
Was it Light XC or was it
Strikeforce? No, what happened, he just fought for an independent promotion. They just had it on pay-per-view. I remember it took place in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
It was just some independent promotion, but it was on pay-per-view. And he won that one. I just want to comment on the fight. I watched this fight, and as a guy that watches MMA regularly, he needs to train more on his stand-up defense because he kept eating punches like crazy. I'm kind of surprised that he wasn't knocked out or stunned during the first round. But I will say his ground game, it was actually pretty good. He pretty much was on the offense once Batista took his opponent on the ground. And like I said, he needs to practice more on his stand-up because he can't just stand there just taking the punches one after another. He's got to defend himself, and that was his only lack of defense.
Mm-hmm.
But it was okay.
I saw some of the fight, too, and I remember... Yeah, agreeing with that he was really, until he got him to the ground, like, Batista was looking like shit for most of that fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, he had him in that body scissors, and Vince Lucero couldn't get out. And the one thing I found ironic, how funny is it that Batista's first fight in MMA is against a guy named Vince?
I think you're seeing too much into things.
I know. Well, yeah, I'm like, yeah, that's the whole point. It's supposed to be just the irony of the fact that I'm going to show it to Vince. Literally. But yeah.
So another story it's worth talking about is Matt Morgan. And apparently he still likes house shows. because over this past weekend, this Friday, he tried to get in an altercation, I believe, with Rob Van Dam at the house show that they had. And then he tried to also get involved on the Saturday event. And my honest opinion of this is, why are they wasting Matt Morgan's talent on house shows when they could have him on TV? I'm saying even as part of the Aces and Eights. No doubt he possibly will be part of the Aces and Eights.
Possibly.
Because, you know, he looks perfect in checkerboard. And a mask on his head. Yeah. You can barely hear him talk because his promo stuff is rubbish. Yeah, that's right, boss. Can I take the mask off now? No, put it back on. But yeah, Randy, what's your take on the Matt Morgan situation that's been building over the past few weeks?
It's interesting because from many of the comments, like many people were believing he was going to WWE, which he may or may not have, depending on. Well, there's a lot of speculation on Morgan's part. And now that the speculation has pretty much ended with the fact that they showed on Impact recently, if not this past week with Bruce Pritchard letting D'Lo Brown know that he needs to handle his shit when it comes to Matt Morgan appearing in TNA rings, which apparently he hasn't done that, as he mentioned. But Morgan in TNA, I don't know, we'll see what he does from here. Maybe he gets the big push that he really hasn't gotten or just never really fully got. So, I don't know, it's just, I haven't really, just been a disinterest from Morgan. Well, he hasn't really been visible, but I don't know. Time will tell.
Sandra, your take?
I don't care, to be honest.
see, when I saw these cryptic tweets, yeah, I'm not sticking around here. Instantly, I thought, he's going to shimmer. just a really, you know, be like Santina Marella and just cross dress. Or something like that. Just really confuse everybody, including himself. But anyway. Now, one bit of news that has broken in the last day or so is the fact that Raw is going to have another social media ambassador. Because apparently Charlie Sheen and Larry King did so well. Except this time, it's somebody that actually has history with WWE.
Actually, all of them have had history with WWE.
Where was Angel Charlie Sheen? Was Charlie Sheen involved with WWE?
Oh, well, other than Sheen. But
Larry King has done stuff before. Was Larry King actually on Raw before? I know they impersonated him with.
Oh, yeah, there was that. Well, he's had the wrestlers on there before. I don't know if that necessarily. That's probably far from saying he's done something with them, but he has interviewed him on his former show, Larry King Live. He might have made an appearance there before. But yeah. Of course, Chris Angel was a guest host, and then, as you mentioned, Arnold smacked the shit out of Triple H.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is getting to the Twitter, and he's going to be tweeting about the wrestling this week. I can't remember where Raw was from this Monday, but he'll be tweeting about it, and probably making as many bad puns as he did in The Expendables 2. And
or Batman and Robin. Did I get the right one? Was it Batman and Robin? What, that was delicious.
Oh my god.
I'm just wondering if Mr. McMahon's big announcement is because Arnold Schwarzenegger is tweeting, I'm bringing back the World Bodybuilding Federation.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man.
We're going to have the first person in our Hall of Fame is Lex Luger. And we're going to get Sting to induct him.
I don't think he did shit there in WBF either. He got
But, oh, I hope Arnold Schwarzenegger doesn't do those bad puns. Cause I remember watching that movie again a couple years back, and holy shit, every fucking line he does. Well, not every fucking line. Of course, that's major hyperbole, but the majority of his lines are puns. Icy puns.
Haven't you seen Running Man? Actually, haven't you seen many of his stuff? He does puns quite a lot in his movies.
It's just a lot of these really weren't that funny, and the fact that the movie's terrible as it is really heightens the fact.
You know who to blame for that?
He's
starting with Jay and ending with Schumacher, and now his middle name isn't Michael.
Although the other one wasn't as bad. Joel Schumacher, but yeah, that is who you blame totally.
Yeah. And speaking of blame, the final story is arguably the biggest story of the week, and we can't even talk about it in detail for probable legal reasons. Because I don't think any of us, nor the network, wants to get sued. But no, if you want to find it, it's out there. We can tell you that there's a description of the thing on Gawker, but that's all we can tell you.
The link is from.
All we can tell you is that, yeah, on there, they have apparently been sent a copy of the Hulk Hogan sex tape. And they classify it as one of the funniest things they've ever seen. From the write-up, it does look brilliant. The fact that also certain other parties involved is interesting.
Oh, yeah, that's... I think that's the main thing I'm looking at. Not so much that it's Hulk Hogan fucking, but the fact that, especially early on in the video, you hear there's a guy okay with I'll say this possibly because we don't know for sure if it's this guy in question, but possibly you hear Hulk Hogan's best friend that happens to be a radio host and a shitty TNA interviewer at that.
Well, I don't know if we're to code name his name as Bully. Bully the Heart Chamois Lever. There you go.
The dude that Awesome Kong beat the shit out of. Not that we can't say his name regardless of that, but it's funnier that we don't. So that you actually know
that. The dude that got beat up by Awesome Kong, allegedly.
Oh, no, not allegedly. Everybody says
I was just doing allegedly to cover it, but yeah, I thought, no.
No, the alleged part is if that's him in the video. No, that's...
No.
No, we know not that ass whooping is known. But yeah, supposedly this guy is okay with his wife getting fucked by his best friend.
And he'll keep doing his paperwork in the office. Wow, it's just...
Oh, man. And I'm pretty sure it's him, too. Like, I'm fairly certain.
I love the fact as well that they can't show the stuff, but loads of other websites have tried to recreate it. And the best one is actually on the Facebook page right now, and somebody's managed to edit an episode of Thunder in Paradise.
I saw somebody post. I haven't seen it yet, but I saw somebody post that video.
That's a brilliant edit. That's what I'm saying. It was such good edit, it could have been in When Harry Met Sally. Paperclip, I'll have what she's having. That's all I'm saying.
Everybody, well, depending on who you ask, they're either thinking of the recent Daniel Bryan and Kane skits, or very obscurely, which would be me, the Kurt Angle Christy Hemme video they did for WrestleMania 21.
Oh yeah, Mae Young was involved in that one as well, though, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was the woman.
She is the going to. Okay, whenever there's a When Harry Met Sally moment, Mae Young has to be there. So apparently, Mae Young was on the filming of Thunder in Paradise.
Little side paper clip on that for the actual. I found out the woman who actually says that in When Harry Met Sally is Rob Reiner's mom, who directed the movie.
Yep. That's a trivial paper clip. I love it.
Mm.
That's a paper clip with a cap on. Yeah. We can't talk about it because we haven't seen the full thing. There is a minute like excerpt, which I don't want to watch because
I don't want
the poison in my eyes. I
think
if I watch it, the next time I open my eyes, everything will look like the NWO and it'll be in black and white forever.
Oh, man.
That painful, so I'm just steering clear of it until the 30-minute one, which will go spread all over all the other porn sites. Look, look, look. It'd be like, I've only got so much money. Do I sue the porno people or do I sue Scott Steiner? Which one will give me more money?
Probably. Well, yeah, the porno people definitely will.
So with that, there might be a special song dedicated to the aforementioned news story at the end. But we've got to the end of part one. That's all the news for this week. Next up, we're going to talk probably... We've already gone through Shikara's King of Trios results, but this time we're going in-depth. We've all seen the first night, and we'll give you our thoughts on the 8 matches that happened that night, and possibly some of the promos, because a couple of the promos were awesome, but we'll get to that in a bit. So here's some music, here's some adverts. We'll see you in a few minutes, people.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to show you how being a Wrestling News Live family member and diehard listener can change your everyday look on life. Example, here's the brand new commercial from Subway.
Hi, Samantha. Hi, Todd. Do you want to be my boyfriend?
Sure.
Great. Give me a melt.
My melt?
Yeah, I'm your girlfriend now.
I don't think this is working out.
Now let's replay that commercial and show you what Todd would have said to her had he been a member of the Wrestling News Live family.
Hi, Samantha.
Hi, Todd. Do you want to be my boyfriend?
Sure.
Great. Give me your melt.
My melt?
Yeah, I'm your girlfriend now.
Shit, bitch. The hell you think you are? Give me my sandwich back. Bitch, please. Better be willing to give me some of that pussy before you get some of my sandwich. Shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is just another example of how becoming a member of the Wrestling News Live family helps you live a better life.
Let's go to our ring announcer.
Wrestling fans, your ring announcer here, Sean Beckerman, and I'm proud to present to you the Pro Wrestling Nostalgia Podcast that's taking the IWC by storm beyond the bell. On each edition, we cover a different theme, taking you back in time to relive the greatest and worst in professional wrestling. We go behind the mic, where you will get backstage stories from the perspective of a pro wrestling ring announcer on the independent circuit. Find out what it was like to announce some of the greatest stars in pro wrestling history and the funny stories behind the scenes. And we wrap it all up with old school wrestling music. So tune in to Beyond the Bell each and every week on the SNS Radio Network, and I'll see you at the matches. It's go time!
Hey guys, it's Mr. Money on the Mic, JJ, all caps Sexay of the SNS Radio Network. If you're looking for the latest news in professional wrestling and, of course, some of the best columns on the World Wide Web today, visit headlocks2headlines.com. That's headlocks, the number two, headlines.com. It's the official news site of the SNS Radio Network. You should make it your official news site as well. Once again, www.headlocks2headlines.com.
What is up, my SNS peeps? I am the Sensational Sequel, Sensational Sean.
And Ashley, too. Yes, it's still my name. I haven't changed it yet.
If you don't know who we are, I mean, we have this really cool show on the SNS Radio Network. It's called The Open Book. We cover wrestling, any, like, big news that happens in the week, but we more so cover the pay-per-views. We talk about how they went and how we think they should have gone. We cover a little thing called fantasy booking. We also cover all the biggest gaming news, games that have come out, and game reviews.
Plus, we've got the latest from the world of film entertainment. Also, perhaps an off-so-regular performance by me in the reviews of movies, too.
This is The Open Book. Catch us every week right here at the SNS Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Whole Indie Show, part two. I don't know whether we should call it. I was going to make a Twilight reference, but then I thought I am not that retarded. But anyway, Sandro and Randy still with me, and this time it's trio's time, and we're talking the first night. There's too much to talk through in one show, so we'll probably have to split over various other shows in the future, but tonight we're talking night one, which was, I think it was all eight matches in the first round.
So yes. Yep.
All 49 competitors, or planned to be 49, but we'll said the deck part.
I really wanted to see them too, but we'll go into
The first match that took place was technically, by name, the defending champions, the Colony. But due to the... What is it called again?
Chikarbermetrics.
Yeah.
Chikarbermetrics, yeah.
Due to that, whatever that is, quite a lot of the teams got weirdly screwed up. So this was Fire Ant, Green Ant, and... was it Assailant?
Assailant, yeah, Assailant.
Taking on the Sendai Girls, which was, off the top of my head, I can't remember.
Maiko Satomura, Sendai Sachiko, and Dash Chisako.
Yeah, the last two are sisters.
Mm-hmm.
With ginger hair, which is awesome.
And one dresses like Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, and even does the kind of Jeff Hardy style.
Yeah.
Even the Jeff, even for that, for the final bit when she did her finisher, she did like the Jeff Hardy put the hands up in some kind of action to the face.
Yeah, she, you can tell she's a Jeff Hardy fan.
It's just she hasn't done her face paint up and walked down on drugs.
That'll come soon in time.
Yeah. This opening match was very nice, I will say that. Given that this is the first time I've actually seen a proper Chikara show, it was... this is refreshing. And it wasn't even like... I love the fact as well, for people that hadn't seen it before, they do basically say, you know, there's no barriers here. The blokes can fight the women all the time.
Yeah.
So for those people that had seen it for the first time, they were being introduced to all the concepts gradually, and it wasn't like you're supposed to know that blokes fight women.
Oh, Chikara does a good job of that. And they made, especially if you watched High Noon from last year, they made sure to mention certain things that some people won't get right away, especially when you watch Chikara, which some stuff you really do need to watch or know about to get why it has its meaning.
But, Sandro, would you say it was a very good technical battle? Because that's what I have on my notes.
Well, I thought this match was good. You know, it's interesting to point out that Assailant, during the last few shows, he's trying to get along with Green Ant and Fire Ant, especially at this show, that he went so far that he actually had his mask very similar to Green Ant and Fire Ant's design. And there was a point where they all worked together, with all three of them doing the triple drop kicks to the corner. And I'm not really surprised how this match ended. Obviously, the working together, that didn't last that long, as Green Ant and Assailant was clashing heads, and this basically resulted in Assailant crashing into Fire Ant, and the Sendai girls getting the advantage, hitting a moonsault and then a frog splash to Green Ant to get the win.
Jeff Hardy frog splash.
As long as it wasn't the Jeff Hardy 450 splash, we're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was a good match to open up with. And then we had a promo for the next match, which was the Batiri basically proclaiming that they would be champions, and even if they weren't, as long as the Spectral Envoy didn't make it and win, that's all that mattered. And Ophidian came in and everything, and I still wish the Assyrian portal was together.
I do too, but sadly, Amasis got in the car accident, which left him. Well, it did leave him paralyzed, but it left. He didn't want to. He pretty much, if he had wrestled, he had the chance to become paralyzed again, and he didn't want, as he mentioned at High Noon, he didn't want the fans to see him that way. Not that they knew what he looked like, but
it's
nonetheless.
It's just that if anything gets me down, I can just go to YouTube and go to the hypnosis moment and the dance-off to...
the moment that made him viral.
Rapper's Delight, wasn't it, the song?
There's a few of them that they did the hypnosis with.
I think it was Rapper's Delight, the one that I've seen. It was
the
commercial over in the UK.
Okay, because they did... I know they've done it in Dragon Gate USA before. There's the one they did at... what's easy? CZW. Was it Cage of Death? I know it's easy. The only highlight to that show, From Small Beginnings Comes Great Things. And that was... Now that I kind of think about it, yeah, that show really did suck. And anybody who watched it will tell you that. There's that, and then... But yeah, Ophidian, we have... speaking on the Batiri, there's the... We got a new big bad group in Chikara now with Delirious as the leader, Ophidian as the second in command, and the Batiri as your foot soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Even the genius thing is, obviously, it happens in Ring of Honor quite a lot. They throw streamers into the ring. For the Batiri, threw rolls of toilet paper. And it was genius. Just as their opponents, 3.0 and Akuma, were being introduced, somebody managed to land one right on Kobold, who mass one of the three, and he went down like he was shot. It's like, oh my God, what the hell? And he was holding his leg for some reason. It hit the back of your head.
Oh, yes, the popular embassy tactic.
You're not Rivaldo from the Soccer World Cup in 2002. Paperclip. He got kicked. The ball got kicked in his face, and then he held himself in the groin. That's a weird place to feel your penis hurt. I don't know. But this was also the nice bit as well before they even started. Some, I can't remember who a 3.0 got the sign out the crowd, but it said Booyah Kuma.
Oh, yeah. I actually like that as a name.
He got it. Did the Booyah Kuma thing, and then just elbow dropped the sign.
That would have been, who's the one that, Jagged does the elbow drop.
Yeah, Scott Parker.
Scott Jagged Parker, yeah. And then Shane Matthews is the one who's hyped up is all hyped up can be.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, and then I think as well, he also elbow dropped a toilet roll.
Yeah, that's been a lot. They've been doing that pretty much every match now. He just elbow drops shit like he's Ric Flair. Elbow dropping kids.
This again was a very good match with the two teams, wouldn't you say, guys?
Yeah, this was a decent affair from the two. This was mostly, a pretty standard match, standard trios match. Batiri getting the win here with, I forgot what it was right off the bat, but the Batiri did win here.
Kobold, wasn't it, with his...
Oh, toilet. The Demon's Toilet, yeah.
Yeah, Demon's Toilet. But there was assistance from Ophidian.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a thing of notice. The referee catches Ophidian doing the double knees. Did you catch that watching?
Yeah.
There, and that's another thing to a note. I don't know if they did that on purpose. I highly doubt it, but there are a few ref screw-ups in the whole all three nights. And I think that might have been the most notable. Or that one and the one from night three with Fist and Spectral Envoy, which we'll get onto when we cover that show, if I remember.
Spoiler.
Spoiler. Oh. I just thought about that.
Well, we've already given the results.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't matter.
We already gave the results like two shows ago or something.
Yeah, kind of did.
So if you haven't learned to that, if you haven't heard those shows, spoilers! Next up was... Well, we first had a promo for Osaka Pro.
Oh.
And obviously, because it was in Japanese, I understood nothing that they were saying. But I can't remember who he was, the guy in pink.
Kikutaro.
Yeah, Kikutaro. All he was doing was, oh, Tatanka, and getting a camera and taking a pic. Oh, Tito Santana. And then he was taking a picture of the cameraman. It's like, and then when they come out, one of them's taking donations.
Ebison.
Yeah, it's Ebison.
And for a donation, you get a rose on the head. What?
Oh.
This is genius.
Was it? I think it was this match, the one against Fixed. I started dying laughing when they did the reverse hot test.
Oh man!
You go over me, okay? You do drop. I'll do drop kick. Okay, stay in the ropes. He just drops kicks for airs. Wow.
I think the highlight for me in this match was, I believe when Osaka Pro, they had Icarus on the camel clutch, and one of them, they grabbed a glasses, like a Japanese
glasses.
Yeah, and they put them on Icarus's face, and he had it pretty much throughout the whole night.
And then he tweeted it.
Yes.
Or touted it or something.
Yeah, Kikutaro took a picture and he tweeted it.
My best bit was the slap battle.
Yeah,
huge slaps from from Gargano. And King Kataru's was just tiny little slap. Mm-hmm. The other one was like, oh, big smack. And then Kataru was so tired, it was like, tiny slap.
Yeah. I'm
trying to think of the other one as well, when they were basically, it was the fist war. And the other one was like, I'm going to get you. And then one of the fist guys goes off the ropes. And before he can even get hit, the other guy's fallen to the ground and, like, convulsing. I think it was King Kataru again.
I think it was this match. It was the match from the next show. I believe it was Ebisawn on the ropes, and he's trying to walk the ring ropes, which you see Command Bolshoi
do with amazing speed.
And he's
it's like he's doing old school, and he's got his hand up to like show he's sober, and then by the third step, he just like opens his legs and just falls crotch first onto the ring ropes. And it's like, you clearly did that on purpose, but you could just imagine that's what Undertaker wants to do just to make his matches more funny.
Yeah, another highlight during the match is when Icarus finally took off his ring jacket, and he had a pink shirt that said "Best in the World."
Yeah.
Oh yes. Which, for those of you that don't know, the fans, what are the chance? Icarus, arguably one of the most hated men in Chikara history, rarely ever gets. When he's not doing anything. When he's not teaming up with faces or dressing up like his old gimmick, he rarely ever gets cheers. The only other time I've seen him was I forgot which show it was, but the August show. I think it was Shoot a Crooked Arrow. Yeah, the Milwaukee show. There was a few fans cheering for him. But other than that, he gets universally booed. Well, for good reason, too, but he's a very entertaining heel. And then the chance they give him is worse than the world, and that's why the shirt was very iconical.
But he took that shirt off to reveal his tattoo and everything. And then when he was doing that, good old King from Osaka was threatening to take off his top as well. His but anyway, the finish came with, because accompanying Fist was Sugar Dunkerton.
Yes, that's part of the
people were cheering about Fist.
Yes. And
with thanks to borrowing Sugar Dunkerton's comb, I think it was Icarus, was it?
Yeah, Icarus.
Got the comb in the eye to,
I think it was in the throat. Yeah, it was in the throat to, okay. I want to say Takeo Kida.
Yeah.
But that basically led to the freak out and
the third Fist versus Fist versus Osaka Pro match. Third in a row they've had in the Trios tournament.
They either like or hate each other.
Yeah.
So then the fourth match was very interesting because it was the other half of the, I guess, the combination getting completely...
Oh, the Swarm.
The Swarm, which was genius because it was Combatant and Deviant, and they came out, and then Soldier Ant just came past them, go, fuck this shit, I'm celebrating. And the Shard was with them as well, and that was... And then they were up against Jigsaw, who was incredible. Quackenbush, who should be good because basically he runs the thing. And the first time that I've seen her, yet they kept proclaiming her as the best women's wrestler ever in Manami Toyota.
Yeah, she's pretty fucking good. I don't know if I'd put her as the greatest one, but that was, I think it was Wrestling Observer named her that back in 2003. But yeah, she's very good at what she does. I'll put that there. Somebody who probably has a run for money from what I've heard a lot, is Satomura, she's pretty good too. But yeah, Toyota is, holy shit. Yeah, she's a boss. The Swarm, was I going to say? One thing of note with the Swarm and Colony mix-up, as you mentioned, how Assailant is actually trying to work with the colony, yet the Fire Ant and Green Ant want nothing to do with him. It's the much total opposite is Combatant and Deviant, mostly Combatant, who's a bit of a he's pretty big asshole out the fight. he was trying to make Soldier Ant form with them, and Soldier Ant was having none of it, as they've had for the matches beforehand, and this match being no different.
Yes, but interesting at the end as well, because they Jig, Quack, and Toyota got the win, I think probably pretty much hitting all their finishes.
Just watching this part too to remember something. Jigsaw hit the double stomp, Quack and Bush did the Swanton or Senton bomb, and Manami Toyota did her moonsault on Deviant for the win.
And then Combatant got basically choked out by Quack.
Yeah, he pretty much snapped his neck, it looked like. Which was, and as I mentioned before in the August shows, the show after Shoot a Crooked Arrow, Ring of Wax, which was done in, Indianapolis. Quackenbush and Jigsaw had tagged up against 17 in the Shard. And in the match, Quackenbush hit all four Quacken drivers in reverse order on 17, earning a very rare Excesivo de Castigo call, for which, if you don't know Spanish, that's excessive. Or what am I saying? If you don't know, most of y'all don't know other than Sandro.
Paperclip.
And that means
paperclip on Espanol.
Yeah, right there. Excuse me, excessive violence used, and then Gid Quackenbush taking yet another member out of the Gekido. With Jigsaw not too happy about that fact. And this one very interesting because although it could be justified with Quackenbush taking out 17, considering 17 broke his wrist and took out Dragonfly and Chun Long, who was a guy they were hyping up to debut only to get injured in his match against 17 permanently by 17, who was taking people out. So it made sense for him to take out 17. Now, it seemed to... it's one of those where you're really discovering... Or not really discovering. Quackenbush is having a bit of a morality crisis here when it comes to the Gekido, which more than likely is going to lead to a Rudo turn, which is something I actually predicted. Or most people probably did, especially if you saw the match at High Noon against Eddie Kingston, which might have been just a teaser for... Or a little sample of what Rudo Quack might be.
But, Sandro, your thoughts?
Yeah, this was another good match. Like Randy said, Quack, anytime he faces any members of the Gekido, he just snaps in any way. And this was no different, taking out Combatant. And, after he did that, Jigsaw confronted him, telling him that you need to stop. We need to focus. We need to focus on the next round. And Quack just like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, and Quack said to Soldier Ant, didn't he? Something along the lines of, "I'm doing this for you, to keep you to stop them."
Yeah,
and of course, them is the Brooklyn Brawler, or something like that. But well, it's probably.
Oh, and one thing I wanted to bring up, and something I found very, very weird. If you look at the last year's King of Trios, there's a promo from night two before the Quackenbush Jigsaw and Toyota versus Team Michinoku Pro match. And they're all talking, Quackenbush and Jigsaw are talking, and they mention about all the people who've gone through the Wrestle Factory. And specifically, and then Quackenbush makes a crack at, remember the people that didn't make it, like the two Jose's and the Frank. And if you remember back from a blog they did in Chikara, they mentioned, or Quackenbush mentioned who he thought some of the Gekido was, or actually downright pretty much said who they were, and it mentioned Jose and Frank in reference to one of the Swarm members.
Ooh.
Yeah, one thing you'll notice with Chikara, that they will, they're very anti-WWE when it comes to, why do I say anti-WWE, but kind of the best kind of... the best way to show the polarity between the two
in terms of storyline continuity, is WWE known for their lack of it, and Chikara known for how far they do go and how far almost every almost everything ties together. With just the invention or the Chikara special move in general leading to many of the major storylines from up until then to the BDK to the formation of the BDK.
Yeah, there's certainly a more, you can have storylines from years and years that still get brought up in Chicago.
Yeah, like the fact that Mike Quackenbush and Shane Storm, or aka Stigma, still have 3 points and have yet to cash it in to this day. And still have them if Quackenbush ever does decide to team with Shane Storm or Stigma or whatever he decides to wrestle as, although he hasn't been in Chikara since Anniversario, so maybe he'll bring that up one day, but I don't know.
There's another decent match, because I think we're halfway in now, so this is match five. So this was probably after the interval, and this was the throwbacks, which is, compared to last year, this time it's Dasha Hatfield, Matt Classic, and this time it's Touchdown at Mark Anglicetti rather than Archie.
No, it was Sugar Dunkerton the past 2 years.
Oh, okay. Sugar Dunkerton was about the throwbacks. Nice.
Yeah, it was him and Dasher were the tag team, and then Sugar was gone, and then Touchdown came in, and then Sugar, I don't know if he was going to get brought back early or not, but he got hurt at AIW. I actually just saw the match where he got hurt at, too, AIW Straight Out of Compton. He broke his arm there, and now he's back in Chikara, which also is part of the reason he's using a lariat as a finisher, since there's, I believe, metal in his arm.
But very nice, we want Archie-chan.
Oh, yes.
Before we started.
Well, never mind. We'll talk about
it ties into the fact that earlier on in the year Archie had to basically leave due to losing in the, what was it? It was him and
Colt Cabana, teamed up against the throwbacks with the loser of the fall having to leave Chikara, that being Big Sparse Archie, who turned back into Archibald Peck after Touchdown hit Archie with the helmet, and then Hatfield pinned him, not knowing that Hatfield used the helmet, and also gaining 3 points, which they would go on to lose against the Young Bucks later on in a title match.
But one notable point of this was there was actually live baseball.
Oh yes, this happens with Dasher Hatfield matches, not so much now, but Their games have been known to turn into a baseball game from time to time.
And this was so embarrassing that Matt Classic just went, screw this, and walked out. I can't remember who it was that was batting, but she got struck out. And so they did a Daniel Bryan and Kane and hugged it out eventually.
I think it was Kari Yoneyama.
Yeah.
Actually,
did you even mention the participants from Team JWP?
Oh, JWP, I couldn't remember.
I'll mention it for Command Bolshoi, Kari Yoneyama, and Tsubasa Kurigaki.
There you go.
Because Bolshoi was pretty crazy as well with the red nose.
Yeah.
Doink the Clown is alive and well, people. But then Bolshoi also did a genius thing. She basically did what the guy from Osaka Pro couldn't. Walked along the ropes, then walked backwards along the ropes. Yeah. Which was, I think even Undertaker at his age couldn't walk backwards on the ropes when he does it.
If anything, Command Bolshoi gives Jinsei Sensei, can't even say it, Jinsei Shinsaki a run for his money. Although I should have just said Akushi, because most people know who I'm talking about now.
And then the match finish
was
incredible, in my opinion.
Kurigaki showcasing her strength and able to torture Rack, although it took two attempts regardless, able to torture at Matt Classic and make him tap out, which is very interesting considering, especially if you... for those of you that don't know who Matt Classic is an old-timey wrestler first created back in, of all promotions, Wrestling Society X. And he was pretty much, like, he was the throwbacks before the throwbacks, even though, as weird as that sounds, he's a 50s wrestler, a mask over his head, kind of on, like, Mr. Wrestling 2 or Mr. Wrestling, old-school kind of mask. And, just very old school in his ways in general, and one of them is women fighting and wrestling, which led to a very hilarious exchange last year at the Tag Gauntlet in King of Trios 2011 when him and Darkness Crabtree teamed up against Sarah Del Rey and Daisy Hayes, and Matt Classic handed his jacket and towel to Sarah Del Rey and Daisy Hayes to put it up for, which needless to say, they were pretty pissed about.
And of course, the crazy thing is, they are implying that Matt Classic has been around since the 50s.
Yeah.
So he is about 117 years old.
Yeah. Oh, you know who Matt Classic is, right?
Or no.
Spoiler.
Okay. I might as well spoil it because everybody knows it.
Colt Behind Cabana. The curtain.
It's Colt Cabana.
I was wondering why he was doing the weird, like, muscular poses.
Yeah, that's I was gonna make a joke about that, but it's pretty much a well-known secret that is Colt.
That's why he was teaming with Archibald Peck.
Yes. Well, yeah, it kind of maybe helps, but yeah, it's Cabana.
It's kind of like Mr. America. Pulled the mask up. It's actually me.
Yeah. Well, you had to speak. Well, Archie kind of has.
Well, let's get to
that's
this.
That's why
he
wanted to.
Match six was the Spectral Envoy versus Submission Squad. But apparently, the Submission Squad had quote unquote travel issues. Cue thunderous cheers and yes chants.
Yeah, I was like, damn. Because we talked about this before. If you've seen them now, they're completely different wrestlers from that shit fest they put on in King of Trios 2009. And sadly enough, and I would have thought better from Chikara fans of all people, loud applause.
Probably one of the loudest cheers of the night.
Yeah.
They have to draw from the hat as regards to who it is. Now, it's worth noting that after the throwbacks match, which it basically finished with touchdown and Dasher.
Oh,
yeah, it was touchdown, yeah, Dasher, and Veronica, and mm-hmm. basically touchdown decided to go with the chick rather than the team. So teasing a little bit of stuff there. And Dasher and Veronica, touchdown and Veronica were still out there. And then, first name out the hat, the mysterious and handsome stranger. And the crowd went, yes! Yes! And then cue his music. He comes out, does his gun pose. Touchdown's like, oh shit. Veronica's like, this guy's handsome and mysterious. Stranger takes off his hat, lets her go by. And then the crowd just goes, we don't know you.
And this thing, it might not make sense to y'all for how Ashley is explaining it, but to kind of clarify and yet again pull the curtain again, this is very, very interesting they did that considering the fact, well, everybody pretty much knows it's Archie in the mask.
Spoiler.
Yeah, this is pretty much a take on... the best I think take would be to say the Midnight Rider when Dusty Rhodes put on the mask as the Midnight Rider, or Junkyard Dog as Stagger Lee, or Hulk Hogan as Mr. America. And well, the handsome thing is another funny thing because part of the reason Veronica that was one of the reasons why she liked Angela Seti or mentioned in a video blog. So
Yeah.
A lot of very, what's the word? Foreshadowing there. And then there'll be a, then we'll probably talk about that more when we review the recent Chikara shows. Cause there's,
we were going to mention the results later, but it's worth mentioning this in tying with this. One of the past shows this weekend, after his match, he did say it's time for him to touch down. So I think that tells you Archibald Beck is a mysterious and handsome stranger.
More yeah, than likely. If everything else did it tell you. Hell, just looking at him, you can tell it's
yeah. Peck. And then next up, out of the hat, was Mihara from Osaka Pro.
He really didn't do shit. He was yeah. just... Well, sometimes that happens. He'll have people. Shit.
He got on the wrong side of the fans. Because then we had the third name picked, and the first name out the hat was Quang the Ninja.
Oh yeah, they always do that. The whole joke with the random hat pick. Anytime somebody doesn't make it for a show, they usually pick a name out the hat, or and sometimes it's in joking or it's whatever to announce who their surprise will be or the replacement.
Lariat. That was
yeah.
Because the reaction Stranger did to that was like, what? That was, and then Tito Santana, and I think quite a lot of the fans were just thinking that Tito Santana isn't here.
It's a little mix of both. It's one of those where usually they usually do about two names, and then they're like, not here. And then usually the third name is third or fourth name will be somebody that maybe they're here, maybe they're not. And then they come out through the, and then when you hear the entrance music, they're there.
So yeah, Tito was there, got a big reception, and then Spectral Envoy, Hella Wicked, Frightmare, and Ultramantis Black came out, and it started off with Stranger versus Ultramantis. And before they even started, it became a jacket face-off. which then became a costume face-off. And Ultramantis' like skull stick thing then got Stranger's hat on it. And then they were ready to go to fight, and then they went, hang on. And they both took off their jackets. Which is nice, and there was quite a lot of nice moments in this. Well, especially with the, as I say, Mihara got pissed off quite a lot of the fans because Tito was going to get tagged in. And then Mihara did it.
Oh, yeah. And
then he was possibly more hated than the Bateri with toilet rolls.
And the Bateri are supposed to be hated and thrown with toilet rolls, embassy style. Yeah, Mihara just really didn't click in the match. He was just there.
Tito was the one that clicked. He was.
Oh, well, yeah, they were wanting to see Tito regardless. Yeah, the old names, they will pop for the old names, as you will find out this whole, this whole weekend.
Tito, for me, Sandro, Tito was still excellent for his age.
Yeah, he looked pretty good for his age. It was really surprising to see him there. He got a really good reaction when he came out.
And, although, you know, what is kind of odd, sorry to cut you off there, how Tito, and one thing, and it might be just because the indie wrestling or whatever, notice how, like, other than really Mihara, Tito was the biggest guy in that match.
Yeah.
Well, maybe more in weight, because Hella Wicked and Ultramantis are about 6, or no, Hella Wicked for sure is in around 6 feet. Mantis there, and they're about 190, 180, not too skinny, but kind of in the middle. And then Frightmare is short at, he's 5'6", about 170, and then Peck is tall and skinny, and then Mihara is stubby, and then you have to Santana.
It was very interesting, because he was doing the elbow strikes, wasn't he, I can't remember, it was Frightmare or Hella Wicked.
I think it was Ultramantis. I know they had an exchange.
Well, no, because he did it to one of them, and then Ultramantis ran in and quickly rolled him up because of the tag rules that they have in there, which are Lucha Star rules, which as soon as somebody's on the outside, anybody else can tag in. and it was that kind of thing. And when the finish happened, he was like celebrating and then putting his hands up saying, look, sorry, but you're only here for one night. This is a personal battle kind of thing.
Yeah.
We have to win, and we're going to have to do it by any means necessary, no matter who our opponents are. So it's like, you know, no disrespect kind of thing, which was a nice touch.
Well, yeah, because, well, one thing with Ultra Mantis, more in particular, that he literally, it's hard to say this, like, talking about the past and the future, up until he, spoiler alert, won, him and Spectre Envoy won King of Trios, Ultra Mantis Black didn't win anything in Chikara. Literally, I mean anything. Not necessarily, well, he won matches, of course, but, like, he never won King of Trios, never was in the, I think he might have competed in the Young Lions Cup, never won that. Never, or was it the last man in the Cibernetico? Although his team has won. Didn't win Rey de Voladores, has not won anything. Chad World Grand Prix, nothing up until then. So that was one thing that was interesting. And one thing that Chuck Taylor brings up in it, in their pro, or in night three with the Fist Spectre Envoy match in the pre match promo, how Ultra Mantis is a big loser.
And then, well, the next match was Team Ring of Honor versus the Faces of Pain, but during Ring of Honor's entrance, the submission squad actually turned up.
Yeah.
It was very funny.
Yeah, it's a little awkward, but they were basically like, oh my god, we're late.
They thought that was a nice little touch, yeah.
Yeah, it was a nice little touch, and
I would like to see them come back, though, regardless of what did happen, because they have improved. Like, the one I've seen most of really is Davey Vega, who's pretty good himself. The other three, it's interesting. Like, Gary J looks like, I was reading the wrestling blog, and I think his Twitter, whatever, and he pretty much put it right, say Gary J looks like a homeless Chris Hero. And if you see what he wrestles into, you'll be like, holy shit, it's fucking right. Or should I say homeless Cassius Ohno, but nonetheless.
Yeah, but, yeah, fair point. But we've also, yeah, Ring of Honor was the Young Bucks, ironically, and Mike Bennett with Maria taking on the Faces of Pain, which was Meng, Haku, whatever you want to call him, and the Warlord and the Barbarian. This was I don't know, what did you think of it? I wasn't as big into this match as others, but I still thought it was decent.
Match-wise, it was an okay match. I'd agree it wasn't the best match, necessarily. Storyline, I think, maybe not so much the match was good, but everybody really played their part well, especially Team ROH in the whole tournament is just straight assholes. Just the team you do not want to see move on at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of looking forward to seeing the Faces of Pain in this show, but I was kind of disappointed of how Meng looked. He wasn't really much in game shape, but I think they all did well in the match, and I was kind of disappointed of Meng getting pinned. I was kind of hoping it was going to be somebody else, but the end of the match came when Mike Bennett hit a sunset flip on Meng for the 3 count, and Team ROH moves on.
Yeah,
Meng really. Yeah, it was kind of surprising to see Meng look that, especially knowing he's probably one of the toughest, if not the toughest, motherfucker ever to wrestle. But on the contrasting side, the Warlord still looks fucking jacked to shit. Yeah. Like, you could sign him up today, although with his advanced age, he's still
yeah. And then the final match was probably the one with the most history, which is, for legal reasons, it had to be called Team WWF versus Team Extreme Trio.
Even though Leonard F. Chikarson completely, and everybody completely bypassed that fact at least once.
I think that's why Quackenbush was on commentary for that one.
Well, he was on the. That was funny. He was on the first night he was there, and he had to remind LFC, and then he wasn't on the other one, so.
He was on the. I think he might have been on the third night, because I saw him listed at the end, but. Also, the chemist, the commentary is actually genius. They had to have a lot of commentary for the first night with the announcer. What's his name? Mike?
Gavin Loudspeaker.
Gavin Loudspeaker, that's it. But the first commentary with Jakob Hammermeyer was genius.
Oh, hip and I think it was Bryce Remsburg. Yeah, because I remember I thought like Bryce was being a bit hard on Jakob, even though Jakob's a heel. Like it's just kind of how Bryce is. Not that he's a dick, but it's just.
And it will be referred to probably again when we talk about Night 3, but Dasha Hatfield's commentary was fucking awesome.
Oh yeah, one thing with Chikara, they always do, and excuse me, kind of most indies in general that don't have a regular commentating team, they have. But Chikara, I think, Chikara is really the one who does it the most. PWG somewhat, but it's always Excalibur and somebody else, and very rarely do I hear anybody else on PWG commentary without Excalibur. But although Davey Richards on PWG commentary is pretty gold, if you've ever heard that. That's one little caveat or whatever you get to see.
Yeah. Getting back to the match at hand, this was Team WWE. Well, Extreme Trio came out first, which was Jerry Lynn, Two Gold Scorpio, and Tommy Dreamer. Taking on the team of WWF, which was 1-2-3 Kid, Tatanka, and Aldo Montoya, which stupid old me didn't know that he was Justin.
Mm.
See, I didn't know that. I didn't know enough of my history, which is probably shocking. I deserve to be shot, but I just liked it as well because it was a face-off between Aldo and Dreamer. And Dreamer was just saying, look, all the stuff you've pulled already tonight, that's just incredible quality. Show me.
Yeah, that's one thing I like, that they really, and something that they kind of play, and they did this last year with the 1-2-3 Kid or Sean Waltman, is that they try to stick, everybody knows it's that, but whatever the gimmick is, they try to say it's just him as that person, even though we fully know it's that. And then that was another thing. I don't think they wanted them to say it was credible, even though we knew it was. Because I think
Lindner, they did reference it in the post-match interview.
Yeah.
Was it Aldo? Who cares? He still lost.
I think it was Lynn. I might have. But yeah, nonetheless, that was pretty interesting to see, like with Aldo Montoya, how he was starting to show signs of just incredible.
Yeah, but then moment of the night was when the match went slow-mo.
Oh, yes.
Slow-mo. Very funny.
Which is one of the first times I've seen them do it without Darren Corbin, who's pretty much the slow-motion guy.
And, of course, the best bit is they all go slow-mo for a bit. And then Dreamer finds a remote and puts everybody on pause.
Which is, I'll have to show you the video after. Forgot who it did it, but that's a callback, their paperclip to a spot that happened a few years back where a guy pulled out a remote. Forgot what his name was, but he pulled out the remote. And he was like, pause. And then went and I'll show you into the video, but pretty much what Dreamer did. There's a callback to an old spot.
Kind of similar to Click, only without two things. It was more funnier than Click, and it had less Christopher Walken.
I still haven't seen Click, and I heard, that it really wasn't that funny. Or, like, all the funny parts were in the trailer.
All the funny bits were Christopher Walken.
Oh.
because he's Christopher Walken.
Yeah. I
mean, come on, that fat boy Slim Dance is genius.
But he's still a badass. Just watch King of New York.
Yeah. Well, there's an upcoming film called Seven Psychopaths.
Oh.
Yeah, you can guess that he's one of the seven psychopaths.
But, without even having to know what the title of the movie's called.
Trying to remember the finish of the match, how it came.
I know it was Lynn hit the cradle pile driver on Montoya.
Yes. I don't know whether there was a Dreamer driver before it, or I think Too Cold did a...
He did the tumbleweed.
Yeah. He did that, and I guess overall, I have to say, probably, I don't know whether we're grading it or giving it a score out of 10, but grade-wise, I'd have to give it probably an A-.
Yeah, this was... Oh, here we go. I found the clip here. It was Ethan Page against Tim Daunce, and he rewound back. So now he has something to watch during
the break. I was thinking that was going to happen in the match, but then they'd have to remember where they were and try and rewind it, which isn't that easy. But yeah, what were your guys' thoughts overall, grade-wise or score-wise?
For the match or the whole show?
The whole show.
Night ones are always good, but they're not always the greatest nights to me. Well, mainly because it's all trios matches, which isn't a bad thing, but that's kind of what you get. And I really like a lot more of the stuff you get from night two and night three, where it's a mix of both. And they've really kind of, that's where a lot of the really good stuff happens, is where, like, they did have Rated Doors this year, which sucked. But you still had the Tag Gauntlet and various other singles match, especially two comedy matches, which were, when we get to them, it's one of those where we can tell you what happened, but it's really much better if you see it.
Yeah.
Tell you when we review it, but in this case, you really need to see some of the
highlights. We've already talked about, I think we've already talked about the fact that Ryback style jobbers turned up, and also Duck Duck Goose. But
Tag Gauntlet, and then the Duck Duck Goose thing. Yeah, that takes the cake.
But yeah, what were your overall thoughts, Sandra?
Well, before I get my thoughts, I just want to get my thoughts on the main event. I think the best moment of that match was during the slow mo. Scorpio, so his facial reaction was just priceless. It just had me cracking up throughout that whole moment. But overall, great for the show. I probably have to give it an A, in my opinion. I thought it were a lot of solid matches. The main event was a very nostalgic match. I enjoyed it very much. I want to ask both of you guys, what you thought the match of the night for this show was.
In a weird sort of way, I almost want to say Fist of Saka Pro, even though that was more comedy. Because I don't know, that match just really, to me, describes what you get with Chikara. You get a lot of comedy, you get the good action and all that, but I don't know, that one really stuck out to me the most, although there were matches on there that were... I don't want to really say wrestled better, but there were better matches on the card without the comedy, but I think this one really stuck out to me as a match. So I'll go with that one.
We're getting to Golden Globes. We're going best comedy and best drama. for best comedy approach, I'd have to say probably the throwbacks and JWP. Because that had more in there that suited to me because of the Matt Classic stuff.
A lot of that kind of flowed better with the match, so to say, especially if you like Dasher's gimmick and the whole baseball thing and Matt Classic just like taking everything serious, all 50 style. That one, yeah, the comedy really fit more the match than, say, just them doing comedy and that being the match. Especially if you've seen the other two Fisto Saka Pro matches, which were nothing like that. Well, there was probably some comedy, but it was much more serious wrestlers.
The Fisto Saka Pro at some point made me think I was the Beatles and I was taking LSD and I was making Magical Mystery Tour. I was like, yeah. There was a documentary on about the making of that, and apparently they did like a pie chart, and in one of the sections of the pie chart where they were talking about segments of the movie, they just had a face with a smile on it. That's kind of how that match felt. It was, I'm smiling, but I don't know why. But technical-wise, I'd have to say either Team WWF versus Team Extreme, or the opening match, Colony versus the Sendai Girls. Because I think the Sendai Girls is a revelation, and they need to be brought back every year.
Well, I thought the best match, in my opinion, was definitely the Fist versus the Osaka Pro match. I think it was just due to the comedy portion of it, and it was just very fun to watch. I enjoyed it very much. So I thought that match was the best, in my opinion.
Certainly with my grade, it was a V+, but I upped it to an A- because of how many kind of swerve results you had. Because I didn't see either the Sendai Girls or JWP actually going over, and the fact that both did, I applaud Chikara for that.
I called one of them. I don't think I called both. I know I called Sendai because I said it was going to be one of the ant teams and then one of the girls teams. I think I might have said both. No, I said one girl team. I think the Sendai Girls, yeah, was the one I ended up saying.
I think I said Colony was going to go through because they kept pushing about the fact that they had they never won one, and somehow they'd like come together, and not knowing the whole history of the Spectral Envoy thing, because this is my first time basically diving into Shikara's. But I think I saw the throwbacks losing, because there was something that they mentioned that every time that they've been, they've never got past the first round.
The record still stays that they haven't.
Yeah,
I thought that was going to change with Mr. Touchdown leading the team, but
Gary,
I blame Archibald Peck wherever he is, Stetson and all. Oh wait,
One thing that brings me up, that reminds me something very interesting about Archibald Peck, aka or Mysterious and Handsome Stranger. I believe it was in a Chikara Event Center video they post on their YouTube, or wherever you can find this promo at, the Mysterious and Handsome Stranger does a promo in a very heightened Texas accent. One that sounds, I don't know if I should really do the impression here, but a bit of an American Dream feel to it, if you will.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so more Midnight Rider references to boot there. I'm wondering how this will play out, too, because, as we mentioned, apparently Touchdown and Stranger are going to have a match soon enough.
Yeah, I think this will pretty much happen at their next pay-per-view, maybe next year.
Yeah. I wonder if they're going to have it if they're going to have their finale be the, because I believe Cibernetico is going to be the final, the season finale this year, so.
Yes,
maybe you see the Cibernetico as an pay-per-view?
Well, they only seem to do one pay-per-view. I mean, we already saw one in June with the Chikara Source Rex.
Well, I look at that is perhaps they're going to do two, but obviously when they were doing the thing, that the best they could do was do one at the end of the year, because that was the only one they had left scheduled.
Well, they didn't announce. When did they announce? High Noon got announced as an pay-per-view. It would have been around the time of 12, when they announced the 12 Large Summit. So maybe they're just doing one or maybe two. I don't know we don't know for sure, since they've only done two as of now, so there's no really sense of regularity with their pay-per-views. That everybody else who does pay-per-view has, even ZZW, who I think almost every other show now is an iPay-per-view for them.
So, just as a quick rundown, because we were going to cover these, but nothing majorly happened, so we'll just cover the results quickly. And this is the Shikara shows from this past weekend, the Deep Freeze from the Saturday, and the Zodiac Crimes on the Sunday, which Deep Freeze, we had Ace Haven defeat Carl Matthews in, was a showcase for NWA Pro South. So they're not people that you would find in Chicago normally.
Although, well, funny you mention that, there's a rumor that, or at least I had read it from the wrestling blog, that's the only one that I know. The rumor is that Carl Matthews was the guy who played 17.
Okay.
Really?
It might be, because I'll have to start kind of looking at him. But I do know that Matthews has two tats, which if you saw 17, he was covered up in a pretty much full body suit. So that...
Very interesting.
Oh no, that's... it's just one thing that helps, but that... oh no, maybe some speculation to look at there.
Then we had some trio stuff with Oberion, Kodama, and Ophidian beating Icarus, Chuck Taylor, and Sugar Dunkerton. Which was, yeah, being labeled as a bunch of rudos and some sugar. Because everything needs sugar, apparently. Then we had, just looking, Soldier Ant defeating Saturine, which I don't think was advertised. So by the looks of that, they drafted that in as a last-minute match. Then we had Kobold defeating Frightmare. The Mysterious and Handsome Stranger keeping his undefeated run by defeating Deviant. Then Tim Donst and Jacob Hammermeyer defeating Fire and Assailant. Which I think, that does that give them 2 points? Gave them 2 points, I think.
I believe so.
Then we had Shard defeat Akuma. Okay, that put me off, Ross. Oh, you damn it. Right.
Well, I haven't been there for the other one, so I don't remember how he did say Saturine. But nonetheless,
and the reason I know it's put out, the reason I know it's put out Saturine is because I actually watched the a glimpse of the second night show, so I know it's put out.
Yeah, that will help when you do hear the right name. Oh, never mind. I did correct him anyway. Correction, I did make that correction.
correction of a correction, what? We also had the Shard defeat Gran Akuma in a one-on-one match. Then the Spectral Envoy, which I'm guessing was it must have been Hella Wicked and Ultra Mantis Black beating Lost Ice Creams. I don't know who from Lost Ice Creams it was.
I know is they had an ice cream in the name. Ice cream in their name.
And then in the main event, a successful defense, successful first defense of the Young Lions Cup, as Mark Angelosetti defeated Green Ant.
From what I heard, some nefarious tactics, some cheating tactics.
Well, it's Angelosetti. What do you expect?
Yeah.
And then with the second night, the Zodiac Crimes, some interesting stuff seemingly did go down the previous night. Because apparently Chuck Taylor hurt his knee, so he couldn't compete. And Frightmare was injured and wasn't able to attend either. So the first match was the Throwbacks taking on the Bravado Brothers, which won with Dasha Hatfield pinning Harlem Bravado with a sunset flip after Anglicetti threw a football at him. But due to that, the Bravados, who previously had 2 points in the Campeones de Parejas, lost those points. So they were only 1 point away from getting that 3 points that they needed to try and go for the belts, and they missed out. So that's their fault.
I'm surprised it wasn't from 3.0 trying to screw them over, especially considering 3.0 lost 2 points to the Bravados, which is how they got their second point back at, I think it was Shoot a Crooked Arrow. Yeah. Believe that show.
Then we had Ophidian taking on Granakuma, which Ophidian won apparently with a bit of a botched ending via a roll through prawn pin. Then we had Saturine taking on Amber O'Neil, which Saturine won with a springboard crossbody, and a submission with an armbar from that. Then the Mysterious and Handsome Stranger took on Walter Eaton of CWF Mid-Atlantic, which Stranger won with a top rope leg drop. And then, as I say, after that, he made the touchdown reference. And then, also interesting, dissension to the huge amount in this next match, which was Jakob Hammermeyer and Tim Donst taking on Deviant and Soldier Ant. Which, yeah.
Oh, there's been a ton of dissension with Donst and Hammermeyer since Donst got his head shaved.
Yeah.
Yeah, neither got on anyway, but Donst made Soldier Ant tap with a crossface, but then rather than shaking Jakob's hand, he gave him a clothesline. So they absolutely seemingly hate each other, yet they have 2 points and they're only 1 point away, taking on the Bucks.
Let me put it like this. So Donst loses his hair and Hammermeyer's in the Young Lions Cup tournament. And Hammermeyer's trying to win it, and Donst is like, and Donst has gone pretty much a total 180 from the cocky, boisterous, showy individual he was to almost near suicidal. And, just saying how he believes Hollow Wicked is a god and that you don't want the Young Lions Cup. And Donst pretty much since then has been trying to pretty much curtail Hammermeyer's rise to, I don't want to really necessarily say rise to stardom, but making sure that Hammermeyer doesn't win the Young Lions Cup because he was in the semifinals for it, and then Donst cost him his match against ACH. And then, like, in tag matches, Donst will, it's almost like Donst is fighting by himself at times.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want, it's a very weird relationship. Yeah, Hammermeyer still keeps coming back, even though
Donst got pretty involved with the Grand Champion as well on night two of the trios, but we'll get to that next time we talk about trios. Then we had, as well, Assailant versus Sugar Dunkerton, which Assailant won with a roll through on a crossbody and a Death Valley driver. And then the main event, I don't know if this was, yeah, the main event became a mega main event because it was supposed to be Spectral Envoy versus Ophidian, Kodama, and Oberion, but
Oberion.
Oberion, okay.
Should have brought that earlier, but yeah, it's Oberion.
So it basically became Fist, so Chuck Taylor and Icarus, and the Batiri, and the Shard taking on Fire Ant, Green Ant, Quackenbush, and the Spectral Envoy of Ultramantis Black and Hallow Wicked.
So a 12-man. I don't think they. Is there a word? 10-man tag. Okay, because there's the Atomic. Okay, Atomicos are 8-man. I don't think they had, I don't know what the word is for 10-man tag, but yeah.
I know.
A whole bunch of guys. The finish came with Mantis pinning Icarus with a leaping underhook DDT. But clearly that was obviously worked on at the time. Well, there was an 8-man rowboat, apparently.
The multi-man spot, or one move with multiple people doing it too.
But obviously that had to be worked on the fly given all the injuries that happened, I'm guessing, the previous night. They decided to bring as many matches as they could together. So, but yeah, those are your results from Shikara. We'll probably review night two and night three relatively soon because there's going to be a lot of Chikara in November because they basically got three shows in a week from Chicago, Cleveland, and Manhattan. So we'll get to those as they come around. Next up, we're going to be talking some pretty big Ring of Honor stuff because the pay-per-view is coming up next week. Glory by Honor 11, is it?
Yes.
Glory by Honor 11 from... I think it's Toronto, isn't it?
Yeah. Or what's the city that would be nearby that would host it? That's not it. Yeah, Toronto. Or maybe Windsor, but yeah. Toronto is where it's at.
But, yeah, we'll be... Here's some commercials and probably a song which some of you might get, which the reference to that song we will talk about in segment three. Extreme fans, should I say, as well. So, see you in a few minutes.
Thursday, the SNS Radio Network gets in the ring and starts running the ropes.
When I caught SmackDown again. And I caught I skipped Sheffield's gimmick, and I couldn't help but to think that his new gimmick sounds like an Arby's roast beef sandwich.
Join Brian Maverick Bertrand and Chris Kelly from HeadlocksAndHeadlines.com as they talk about every random thing going on within the WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, and the NorCal independent scene. Running the Ropes also features interviews with stars from the past.
It's me. It's the D-O-double-G, the Road Dog, Jesse James.
Present.
What's going on? This is Kazarian.
And this is the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels.
And future.
Hey guys, it's Rima Fatih.
And so much more. So join the guys every week on Running the Ropes right here on the SNS Radio Network.
Hey, wrestling fans. Do you want a break from the day-to-day ins and outs of the WWE, TNA, and Ring of Honor? Do you like talk radio that pulls no punches? And do you like your sci-fi and fantasy? Well, tune in to the Elite Force Podcast each and every midweek with Chuck W. and each weekend with William Walkie Walker and Mind Wipe. Exclusively on the SNS Radio Network and the Chris Jones Gaming Network. Yeah.
This is going to be fun.
JJ6A.
His charm is so contagious, vaccines have been created for it. Years ago, he built a city out of blocks. Today, over 600,000 people live and work there. He is the only man to ever ace a Rorschach test. Every time he goes for a swim, dolphins appear. Alien abductors have asked him to probe them. If he were to give you directions, you'd never get lost, and you'd arrive at least 5 minutes early. His legend precedes him, the way lightning precedes thunder. He is...
JJ6.
The most interesting man in the world. He has amassed an incredibly large DVD library, and it is said that he never once alphabetized it. If he were to mail a letter without postage, it would still get there. When it is raining, it is because he's thinking about something sad. The pheromones he secretes have been known to affect people miles away in a slight but measurable way. He once punched a magician. That's right, you heard me. His blood smells like cologne. His hands feel like rich brown suede.
JJ6A.
He is the most interesting man in the world.
I don't always drink beer, but when I do, I listen to Wrestling News Live. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.
Segment of the whole indie show with Randy, Sandro, and myself, and you not knowing my name. If you want to know my name, go back to the second segment. There you go. But time to jump into some Ring of Honor. We ran quite a way long on the second one, so we'll try and keep this one much shorter. And first, we'll talk about what happened this past weekend, which was the Ring of Honor live show, which was dubbed Killer Instinct. Because the match that came from this, did it come from the tapings that have already happened? Or not?
No, this is... Lethal already... He got a shot anyway.
Yes. Yeah,
because
so,
the TV stuff hasn't aired yet.
Yeah. Spoilers... So, I don't know whether this is debunking Kyle on the Facebook page talking about it the way he did, but this is, from what Randy just said, this is a title shot that he's already had ahead of something which Jay Lethal may or may not have won on TV tapings. Because I'm trying to keep spoilers down to a low. Yeah. If you want to find out the info, put two and two together and go.
And he may or may not have beat the guy that beat him when he was still champion at the homecoming.
Well, he may or may not beat the guy that he might be facing next week. Hint. But, yeah, we'll quickly go through the results from this past weekend. Started off with Michael Elgin defeating Mike Bennett, which probably would have been a very good match, knowing how good Bennett was at trios and how good he's been so far. And Elgin has probably been the guy that's been pushed in Ring of Honor this year, mostly, wouldn't you say, guys?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Then we had the debut of 3.0 taking on the Bravados, which is kind of hurting my head, considering I've just seen Chikara. But the debut guys actually lost. The Bravados got the win. Then we had Bobby Fish defeating QT Marshall. I don't know whether that was a challenge match or something.
It's funny because Bobby Fish has been wrestling in Evolve in DGUSA as of late. And from what Twitter... It was either on Twitter or Facebook from Ring of Honor. They were saying that looks like Bobby Fish will be making more appearances with us. So, bye bye for Fish in Game Land.
And we had. Oh, go ahead, Sandra.
No, to me, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
If you fade or not.
Then the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Title Triple Threat match. Scum, Jimmy Jacobs, and Steve Corino retained against both Rhett Titus and BJ Whitmer, and wrestling's greatest tag team, Haas and Benjamin. Which also could have been a good match because of the chemistry between all three of them, really. I don't think all three of them like each other, especially Rhett Titus and WGTT. Just generally. I would say plead the fifth, but Randy will say it for me anyway.
Yeah.
Fifth? No. There we go. Every week I have to do that because it's such a genius line. Was it Chappelle or somebody that did that?
Yeah, it was on
Chappelle Show.
They did a Law and Order. They were doing a sketch where they were making fun of Law and Order and had it where what if the rich white guy was acting, or the law treated the rich white guy like they treat the black drug dealer, whatever, a role reversal. Where they were all like, not necessarily saying that whites and blacks get differently treated in court. Well, there probably are cases of that, but just to make fun of how, like, yeah, the supposed treatment of each one, where this guy didn't do a damn thing, and yet he gets charged for things he didn't do, and they're just outright lying about shit. While Tron's in there, and then he's going up to the statement, and they're like, "Do you have something to say?" And then that's where the whole plead the fifth thing comes from. And okay, he was just saying that during it.
So we've also had Roderick Strong beat Kyle O'Reilly. Again, probably a good match. Then in his return, Davey Richards beating Mike Mondo. And apparently cut an anti-SBG promo. I don't know what that is.
The Sinclair company that owns Ring of Honor.
Yeah, Sinclair Broadcasting Group.
Okay. So either he wants to be fired or he wants to get a better TV deal for Ring of Honor.
One of the two.
Yeah, then we had the Briscoes beating the team of Adam Cole and Eddie Edwards, which is interesting considering what match is coming up this coming week. And then finally, the ROH World title between Kevin Steen and Jay Lethal went for over half an hour, and I haven't got the result here, but I don't know if you guys have it, but it went to a no contest, I've heard, which apparently pissed off the fans, and there's a picture here, and the ring is full of more rubbish than the Montreal Screwjob.
or the end of some WCW Nitros where the NWO came out on top.
Yeah.
Or I could just say Bash at the Beach, there were a lot of Nitros where they throw trash at them.
I heard some report that it was because Lethal's mom was in the crowd and she got spat at or something.
Yeah. Apparently, the Steen went up to Lethal's parents because Jay Lethal's parents always show up, especially his mom, who's kind of famous and infamous for showing up to shows. Basically because she's loud as shit, so you'll know. Mm-hmm. You'll know it's his mom when you do hear her. And there's actually a video on YouTube where it was from, I think, Hart. When did they have the black... was it Hart Justice 07 when they had that black tie chain and brawl, Lethal and Dutt? And in the crowd, you'll see Jay Lethal's mom and AJ Lee. Because, of course, Jay Lethal and AJ Lee were... a couple at one point.
Yep.
But not anymore, regardless. But just not anymore.
I blame Ric Flair.
Maybe. But it wasn't the joke I was necessarily going to make, but we could go with that one with Ric Flair.
But before we get to the picks for the upcoming show, there's something I talked about before the break. It was the reference to the last song was Tommy Dreamer, and before I completely forget about it, Randy, Sandro, do you want to go through the card that happened? I think there was an FWE show, and I think they also had I don't know if it was an iPay-per-view, but his own promotion, the House of Hardcore, had a show, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. Let's just go over the FWE pay-per-view that happened in Friday night here in Brooklyn, New York. Attendance was said to be about 550 people in the venue. Chris Masters defeated Firebird Jorge Santi in a master challenge. The next match was for the continuation of the FWE Tag Team Title Tournament as Adrenaline Express defeated House Party. The next match was the second semifinal of the tag tournament with Sanjay Dutt and Daivari defeating Diamond Incorporated. Mike Bennett with Maria Kanellis defeated Colt Cabana in the third match. The next match was Big Daddy V taking on Malta the Damager. Apparently, Big Daddy V plays Malta under the table. Went for the splash, but Malta moved out the way, and V went through the table, and Malta was ruled the winner in this match. I guess it was the table match? I don't know.
It says it's a street fight. I don't know. Or what I'm looking at right here says a street fight.
Well, the table had salad on it, and Big Daddy V just passed out. I don't know.
Well, the next match was a six-man tag with Jay Lethal teaming with Paul London and Brian Kendrick defeating the team of Petey Williams and the Young Bucks. The next
That's
match
a six-man
was...
that looks interesting.
Yeah, I actually want to see this match mostly. So it looks like a fun match. It's been a while since I see Petey Williams. Next match was a unsanctioned street fight. Johnny Knockout defeated the current FWE Tri-Borough champion, Damian Darling. The next match was the finals of the FWE Tag Team Title Tournament as Adrenaline Inc. Defeated Sean Daivari and Sanjay Dutt to become the first FWE Tag Team Champions. The semi-main event was a women's match, a tag team match, as the Beautiful People, Velvet Sky and Angelina Love, defeated the team of Maria Kanellis and Winter. During the match, apparently Winter turned on Maria to get the Beautiful People the victory. And the main event for the FWE World Heavyweight title, Tommy Dreamer defeated Rhino to retain the belt. And that was the whole show for Friday night. Your thoughts, guys?
Go for it.
Well, it sounds very interesting, and the fact is, with the next show, which would the House of Hardcore one, stuff takes a very interesting twist.
Yeah, looking at it. Oh, 2000? Well, that's a big attendance number.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, it helps to some of the people, but still. Well, yeah, House of Hardcore had their debut show yesterday, or whenever, October 6th, Poughkeepsie, New York.
Saturday,
October 6th, there we go. More generic sounding, or not more generics, or whatever. They had their show at Poughkeepsie, New York, and we're about to go over the results.
Yeah, we had Sean Daivari defeating Crowbar via a pin. I better not keep saying pin, because we had Danny Doring and Roadkill beating the FBI. Then Jazz beating Winter, which is always good.
Yeah.
Tony Nese beating Ale Reynolds. I'm guessing that's Alex Reynolds.
Yes.
And Mikey Whipwreck was the special referee for that. Isn't Tony Nese the guy that was in TNA?
Yes, he was there for, I forgot how long. The most notable thing he did was he had that series of three matches with Zema Ion to get into, I believe, his Ultimate X at, I forgot the pay-per-view now, but that's really the most notable thing he did. Did he quit TNA to so he can wrestle the Great Muta? So he could team up with Sammy Callahan for them to take on the Great Muta and Kaida PWS show. Because this was before, as we mentioned earlier, the TNA indie thing, and they didn't want him to work that show. Or whatever, he had to work a TNA show, something like that. And so he decided to quit.
We then had Scott Steiner beat Luke Gallows via pin, with Eddie Kingston in Gallows' corner, but Rick Steiner also made an appearance and delivered Steiner lines.
Mm-hmm.
Then Chris Moldetsky, aka Chris Masters, had a Master Lock challenge against Hell Collins and a match, both of which Chris won. Rhino defeated Sammy Callahan. That probably could have been a good match.
Knowing
how hardcore Sammy and Rhino can get. Then Big Daddy V defeated Ham and Egger via a pin. Spike Dudley also made an appearance and V just walked away.
Apparently he gave V the acid drop.
That doesn't make sense.
Most interesting.
Which he did before back at November to Remember 98.
Hmm. And then most interestingly, Edge made an appearance and cut a promo. Which would have been nice for the... I don't know if it was on pay-per-view, but it would have been nice for the fans there, certainly.
Yeah.
Then Paul London and Brian Kendrick beat the Young Bucks. And then in the title... In the main event, the FWE title was on the line and Carlito beat Dreamer, the champ, and Mike Knox. So Carlito is your new FWE champ. And then afterwards, it all broke down. Carlito and Knox shook hands. Knox laid him out and attacked Carlito. Then Raven came in and DDT'd Dreamer.
Big shock.
And then all of a sudden Metallica hit. Sandman did his usual extended entrance. He ducked, Knox clotheslined Raven, and then Sandman just caned Knox and Raven the crap out of them. And then there was a thank you Sandman chant as Dreamer took the mic and probably said thank, because I think this is the first show that they've done since he opened up the House of Hardcore promotion, so that will be very interesting to see what happens in the future of his promotion. But it was nice to see Edge there and quite a lot of the hardcore guys, and also some of the guys which, like Young Bucks and Daivari. You know, Daivari beats up people in the public for, well, I shouldn't say it like that.
Beat him up in the train.
He took the guy out on the train that was basically threatening to kill everybody. Which is genius. I wonder if that guy's still on the line threatening him and then got run out.
And then the same people who Daivari saved thought he was trying to blow up the train.
Wow.
I know. I'll tell you where I wanted to make, why I decided to make the joke. All of a sudden, it came to my head, let me make a joke similar to what Excalibur made on the first PWG show when Scorpio Sky, under a mask, he did a Tope Con Hilo to the outside, and then Excalibur was saying on commentary that he did that, and then some woman said, "Get away from me," or something like that. But a very kind of racist statement.
I thought you were making reference to that SmackDown episode from 2005.
Oh, that? No, not at all.
So you weren't, so it don't matter.
I know, yeah.
But, yeah.
So that makes it even more fucked up. But no, I was not thinking that. Although I could have the tendency to, but no, I was not thinking that there. No.
For clarification, he'll keep the joke in, but he'll attack the sentiment.
Yeah, something like that.
But, yeah, interesting stuff there. And to try and segue it back to Ring of Honor, it looks like a possible interesting card coming up for Bound for Glory, which it's not in Toronto. It's in Mississauga.
Which, for anybody that's living in Canada, are pretty much telling you it's by or something like that.
Wait a minute. Actually, what did you say? What did you say the show was called?
Mississippi Saga.
No.
Mississippi. Oh.
The name of the show.
Glory by Honor, Ring of Honor, Too Much Honor.
Honor Among Thieves. I don't know. That's the name.
I mean, hell, you're spelling honor wrong. It's got a U in it.
Because I could have sworn you said Bound for Glory.
Bound for, well, I think we got to talk that too. Bound for glory by honor.
Yeah. Bound for glory by honor among thieves. I don't know. They all merge into one. They've all got, when you have promotions that have titles that are too similar to each other, that's why I like Chikara's names, like Shooter Crooked Arrow. Nobody would call their show Shooter Crooked Arrow apart from Chikara.
Well, PWG does have some wacky show titles, too.
Yeah, Kurt Russell Reunion.
The Tango and Cash Invitational.
Yeah, I know them because they're so weird. When there's stuff like Glory by Honor, that sounds like some stick a wrestling promotion into a computer and make it to come up with generic names. It's TNA's guilty of it, WWE's guilty of it, Ring of Honor's guilty of it. Like, final battle. How is it the final battle? They fight again the next week. Come on! But anyway.
Well, that one has a little more meaning, but yeah, I get that.
Yeah, we'll get to Glory by Honor 11 now. Set to appear some of the people that aren't listed in matches but could be involved. Rhett Titus, Charlie Haas, Shelton Benjamin, and Rhino. I'm guessing Rhino will more likely be in the corner of the House of Truth in the matches that are set. First match we'll talk about here is Roderick Strong, ironically House of Truth here, taking on Tadarius Thomas,
Tadarius Thomas.
Tadarius. And it's interesting, Roderick Strong likes doing challenge matches, because I think this is about the seventh challenge match I've seen him do in about 8 months.
Well, that's about all you... Well, not all you can have him do, but until this... Yeah, he's been doing a lot of challenge, Matt. Well, kind of to keep him fresh, have him do something, because we know him and Elgin, they're going to fight eventually, and hell, this might be what it leads to that, even though they've already been having some infighting as is. And more than likely, it's just to keep Roderick Strong, no pun intended, strong here for his match against, or whatever the, probably, yeah, most likely gets Elgin at Final Battle, because I don't think he's going to beat Steen. And then Tadarius Thomas, this gives him a chance to get more acquainted with Ring of Honor and fighting one of the most tenured members on the roster in Roderick Strong.
So your pick is Strong?
Strong, yeah, easily.
Sandro, your pick?
I'm sorry, I kind of tossed off. What's the match again?
Strong versus Thomas.
Strong.
I will probably say Strong as well, because Strong will probably, if he isn't against Elgin, he'll just be in another challenge match like he was at the last final battle.
When he took could on, see that.
Chris Hero.
A lot of people thought that it was going that way, too, that it was going to be Elgin taking up the challenge, because there had already been dissension. It's actually been dissension for a long time. Like, it started really around when Elgin won Survival of the Fittest, and then subsided, and then started to come back recently with the after Elgin versus Richards.
Next match, which is interesting, because given that we've seen the spoilers, this has got interesting connotations. Jay Lethal versus Davey Richards. How well will the Killer Instinct come in the shape of returning Davey Richards? This is a tough one.
Ooh. Mm. Yeah, I'm thinking about this one too. Because we already know what's happened in the future. So, do you have it as if Lethal never beat Davey, which I think he has beforehand, or I might have pinned him in a tag match. I don't know if he has singles wise, but oh shit. Yeah, this one's very interesting, because you know I'm gonna say Lethal.
because his booking's pointing more towards him, or not booking point. The fuck am I trying to say? I think it's Lethal seems to be more in need of the push than Richards does, or in the win.
Sandra, well, I'm gonna go opposite. I'm gonna go with David Richards. The only reason I say this is because spoiler alert, Jay Lethal already has another shot for the Ring of Honor title, so I think it will make sense for Richards to get this shot, to get this win, excuse me, because they're trying to move him up back into the title scene.
Yeah, well, wanted to lean with Richards for that reason, but I don't know, I just think that they'd push whoever the contender is first, especially since Richards really... Well, not that he won't matter, but he really can't do shit since he can't go for the belt again, and it's most likely him and O'Reilly are going to feud.
So I guess it's down to me with the casting vote, and...
Yeah.
I'm going to say Richards, but what will probably happen is Jay Lethal will have a post-match attack to try and show his killer instinct and try and not show what's already been taped. Because I think they still need to build... Because the way you can look at it, if Lethal did attack him afterwards, there would be heel heat, but there'd also be probably face support. Because I think opinion is now divided on Davey.
I think he's face now, if anything. Especially since he dropped the belt. Yeah, that's the weird, especially with Steen, where other than really the House of Truth contingent, everybody's booked face pretty much against Steen.
But we'll see. We've next up got a grudge match between Mike Mondo and Mike Bennett. So basically, if your name isn't Mike, you can't be in the match. Oh wait, Maria's there as well. So basically, if your name starts with an M, you can get in this. See, Mike's had the victory so far, so I'm probably going to say Mondo gets the win this time.
So I think it's actually been the other way around. Maybe Bennett has a win over, but I know Mondo has. And I think Bennett gets the win here.
Yeah, I'm going to pick with Mike Bennett as well.
I don't know, because obviously the last time we saw the pay-per-view, we didn't even see half of it.
And that's
we talked about that on one of the shows when you were rare, Randy, but basically me and Sandro basically said get more tech guys to stop the stream problems. Do you think that'll be resolved this time, or are they going to have more issues?
This shit just got, like, I don't know, Death Before Dishonor really put them in an even bigger hole than they needed to. Because now GFL is, it's one of those where you can only give so many breaks. And I don't want to necessarily say breaks, or maybe I have some, but like, yeah, they need to, what the fuck. Because, like, I understand, like, they're still testing it out, but you'd imagine by now you'd at least...
So you get out of jail free cards.
Yeah, especially when they're trying to promote this. Like, it wasn't necessarily a problem when they were doing it with... Well, what they probably should have done is what they were trying to do and test it out first. Like, when they try... I forgot what the pay-per-view was they were trying it out. And then they had, like, the little preview for what it would be like. So they streamed the... Punk Danielson's only match in Ring of Honor and a TV exclusive match, and that shit didn't work out. And then it's very complicated issue that's really not helping Ring of Honor at all, especially with what happened in Raw yesterday. Is really not gonna, like, this has really been a bad year for Ring of Honor.
Because as it stands, last year was the first time I basically paid for a pay-per-view to watch Final Battle. As it stands so far, I won't be watching Final Battle. I'll watch it on replay or whatever. I'll save my money for Shikara. Or hell, even if I'm that desperate, CZW.
Well, let me see. Down with the Sickness wasn't too bad. Their shows are pretty. You'll get something.
This is
out.
A guy that doesn't like wrestling that goes too hardcore, and he's willing to watch it just because it's got more potential than a Ring of Honor card does at the minute.
And CZW's been on upswing in 2012. They've had a they've had a pretty solid year.
When you have an Iron Man match.
Oh yeah, that match was. That's like the fastest Iron Man match I've probably seen.
But anyway, back to the three titles that probably matter in Ring of Honor. First off, the TV title being put on the line between Adam Cole and Eddie Edwards.
From a company who's really doesn't have people win titles back again with the only other than tag titles and Aries being the sole exception, heavyweight wise. I don't think Eddie Edwards gets his second reign anytime soon. Or maybe at all. Well, I don't know. Maybe they change all that. But I say Adam Cole. Okay. Well, why stop something that's constantly going? Or constantly going that's still. Yeah. That's still hot, yeah.
Sandra?
Yeah, I would agree. Adam Cole retains. Eddie, he doesn't need a title at this point. I think he needs to put himself in the main title picture. He doesn't need this belt.
I wouldn't put him around the main. He's been in it for a while. I'd put, like how Roderick Strong is doing challenge matches, maybe. Actually, that's what he was doing not too long ago, fighting all the former champs.
See, yeah, I'm going to say Cole retains as well. Because I see something happening, but I won't give my thoughts on that until we get to the main event, but it's something we haven't seen many times in wrestling, but we might see it at the end of the year. But anyway, the tag titles on the line as well, Scum, Jacobs and Karina, that is defending against the Briscoes. And yeah, these guys have got history, especially Jacobs and the Briscoes. Paperclip back to the first episode of the show when we talked about the Age of the Fool.
Yeah, and also Carino and the Briscoes. Somewhat of a history. They were both aligned with Jim Cornette in his quest to make sure Homicide didn't win the world title back in 2006 in the Road to Homicide.
All we know is Carino still is a bad person.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's never been faced for, I think, a full year at any point in time in Ring of Honor. He started out as a heel. He turned face when he came back in 04. And then he was there for a little bit in 05, but not long term. Then when he came back in 06, he was heel. And then did it come back till 2009?
He was kind of face when he tried to stop Steen.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, buddy. Yeah, he was face there up until, let me see, he was face from the start of the year, the start of this year? Actually, from last year.
It would have been after Final Battle when.
Actually, I take that back. Yeah, he. That would have been, yeah. Other than up to last year, he doesn't really have long runs his face. And, well, part of it because he was just showing up every once in a while. But, yeah.
Even that face turn basically turned into a heel turn.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I say Scum retain.
Yeah, I think I said that. Or might as well say it now if I have or haven't said it. Scum retains here.
Sandro?
Same here.
And then to the world title match, which is Elgin basically cashing in his Survival of the Fittest title contract kind of thing against the champion. Well, it says whoever's champion at the time, because basically there was quite a lot of events where he might have lost the belt, but he hasn't, because he's Kevin Steen and fuck Ring of Honor or something. Mm. But Sandra, your thoughts first.
Yeah, this is an interesting match here. But I'm going to say, I'm going to go with the other option. I'm going to go with Michael Elgin. I think he's going to win the belt.
Ooh. Randy, your thoughts?
I still don't know who it is that's going to beat Steam, but I'm still pretty sure that, although it would be interesting to see Elgin win it, I got to go Steen here. But this match to me seems like it's going to be very clusterfuck heavy. There's going to be a lot of people involved. Specifically, anybody involved with the two people in the match.
Yeah.
So this match is going to be chaotic.
Strong, Rhino, Martini.
Guardian to Truth. Oh yeah, Richard. No, I don't think Richards will get in. Lethal possibly. Oh well, that's it. They bring up from the six, but
I'm gonna say
Steen, yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna say Steen as well, but because I think although it's a different promotion, I would be intrigued to see, considering the bad blood between them. Or see what's appearing to be in PWG, Cole versus Steen, with both belts on the line.
I don't know.
I could see Cole versus Steen happening. To be honest, I actually think Cole is the guy that's going to beat Steen, even though there's probably other people who, well. I'd say out of the roster, it's Cole. I'd like it to be Generico, but working in certain places kind of hurts that thought.
Yeah, could we have a Steen Generico again for Final Battle?
I almost think that's where they're... Well, maybe not so much now, but I could see that's where they're maybe headed to in the future. If they can get
Generico. If you had Steen versus Generico at the Super Show... In March, April, WrestleMania weekend, that'd get a lot more attention than probably half the matches on the WrestleMania card.
Possibly.
Well, it would depend on if Generico can pull it off as far as the contract would go.
Yeah.
Because I know Generico is supposed to be appearing at the Shikara shows, I think, in November.
Which, that's not so much a problem if he wrestles for Chikara, even though...
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's not the company in question.
It's still nice to see him there, and obviously he's had a major contribution in PWG.
Well, Generico's actually booked for the next three shows for Dragon Gate USA next month.
That
Seems like staying DGUSA 2, so that's why. Because it just seems like that'd be the perfect way. That'd be the one guy really that could, like, scare Steen or make. Well, not really scare him, because he pretty took care of him pretty easily. Or the one dude that could actually do damage to Steen.
Still flashes me back to the ladder match they had at PWG. I knew we'd bring the fucking roof down. That's all that's need to be said. But yeah, an interesting... I don't know whether they're going to... Because six matches probably means there's going to be a couple of matches added on the night.
Yeah.
Or matches that will probably be added on this week's tapings, but... This week's tapings haven't been broadcast yet. But... We'll have to wait and see. So, yeah, it's getting busy in indies. Because we just had two Chicago shows. Have we got CZW shows this month?
Yeah, Cerebral is, I believe, next week.
Let me look that up right now. But Cerebral, one of the... there's somebody big. Oh, yeah. Masada defends his title against the Necro Butcher.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, October 13th, next Friday.
Well, that's going to be one for all the kids.
Hmm.
So that's definitely one. That's a card we'll have to cover this time on the show next week. Trying to think.
Right, I was just about to post it right now with the card one.
Have PWG got a show in November, is it?
No, it's later this month.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the one that Rich Swann is on.
Yeah, it's going to be his debut.
What we've got here is Failure to Communicate. Or I think that is the show, Philly.
And,
Failure to Communicate, that's what the show's called.
Yeah. I don't think there's any other pay-per-views between now and Final Battle for Ring of Honor, is there?
No, the only other...
Well, there's no November pay-per-view listed.
Yeah,
It's the Dragon Gate USA shows. They're all three of those shows going to be pay-per-view.
Oh, okay. So Dragon Gate and Ring of Honor are going to do it like in tandem.
When is the final battle for Ring of Honor?
December.
Okay, because I just
today. It's like it's always December. What you mean? No.
December. I think 22nd.
Okay, I believe Evolved already announced another pay-per-view. But it's only like one show.
Evolve 18, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
December 16th. Mm. Interestingly, it's going to be on a Sunday and it's going to be an afternoon show. It's not an evening show like they had last year.
Never mind. I'm not even going to ask the question because I know it's...
So, yeah, it's going to be a daytime final battle. That's interesting. It also means if I did want to watch it, it would be a more civilized time for me rather than one in the morning. Yeah, because that would be 2 Eastern. That would be 7 UK time. So it would be like a normal pay-per-view. They're even advertising for their 11th anniversary shows in March. Wow. That's booking ahead. And there's the Supercard of Honor. All happening in New York.
That's why I did it ask earlier where it's going to be at, because it's the same place it's always fucking at.
I'm just looking at the write-up as well on the Ring of Honor site about the Killer Instinct show. Yeah, Steen spit on Jay Lethal's mother who was sitting front row. Jay Lethal snapped on Steen in a rage like we've never seen before, and chaos ensued. Steen immediately left, claiming that he wouldn't return. While Lethal was looking for Steen backstage, he continued to assault officials that apparently attacked Cornette. Cornette was sent to the local hospital suffering a severe back injury, and his diagnosis is unknown at this time. Not really. The back injury he suffered in that scaffold match, that's what it was. It's ages ago. The COO,
Should've caught him, Big Bubba.
The COO, Joe Carf, has contacted both regarding the incident, and there's going to be major fallout. The status of both of them is up in the air, and more news will be listed. And we'll probably tell you that news on next week's show.
Yeah.
Probably. And now I'm being distracted by free t-shirts. Oh, that's when you sign up to membership. Oh, that chance is gone. Right, so with that, I think that winds up for another whole indie show. Don't forget that you can catch lots of awesome programming right here on the SNS Radio Network. Live programs, we have Wrestling News Live every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern with Bronx and JJ. Then Bronx at the minute doing TNA Chat Live every Thursday at 10:30 Eastern. straight after the Impact post show. Then Fridays, we have the open book with Sean and myself at 11 Eastern. And then Sundays, when there is a pay-per-view, you're going to have TNA pay-per-views with Bronk, certainly. And normally Trey, but obviously Trey is still on his sabbatical, so taking his time away. So hope everything still is okay with you, Trey. Noticed as well that you've got a job coming up with Google, so make sure you turn yourself into a Google Doodle. That would be awesome. Front page of Google, and there's some kind of GIF of Trey as a Google Doodle. I'd probably download that and keep that forever. That would be awesome. But yeah, we got the, as I say, and the WWE pay-per-views with JJ and Harmony and the Shark, and that's every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern when the pay-per-views are on. And schedule-wise, there is one coming up this coming Sunday for the Bound for Glory card from TNA, and then in a couple of weeks from now, you've got the WWE Hell in a Cell coverage, which I think is the 28th. So, yeah, 3 weeks away from, well, roughly 3 weeks away anyway. But, yeah, you've got that. Randy, what are the fine podcasts which are available on the show other than us?
Let me see. Some fine podcasts available for this show. Well, there's the main one that has the podcast in its name, the Alight Force podcast, and their weekend edition out there. Let me see. Other podcasts. Not that I should forget them. Running the Ropes as well, hosted by Mav and Crelly. You have Beyond the Bell with one Sean Beckerman, and you have, let me see that. I don't know why I'm forgetting. Oh, yeah, this one. Of course, check this podcast out. And I hope I didn't miss any. Might as well ask anyway. Did I miss any?
I think that's all.
Got it perfect this time.
Mm-hmm. I think that's all. So, it's worth mentioning as well that we've got quite a few shows up for the podcast awards. I might as well pimp them out here. Which we might get considered in future years, I don't know. Unlikely. Given the quality of this show, probably to most people. Who is this guy with this British accent? Why does he keep talking about fifth?
Might be more quantity. Well, actually, it is all quantity.
But yeah, you can vote at www.podcastawards.com, and for the categories and what you should nominate for that category, you've got the cultural and arts, which should be nominate Beyond the Bell for that. For movies and films, nominate the Elite Force podcast. For sports, nominate Running the Ropes. And for entertainment, please nominate Wrestling News Live. Now, you can only nominate once, and you've got to nominate before midnight on October the 15th. So, depending on when you're listening to this, you've got about a week. But there's also two other categories that you can nominate for, which is People's Choice and Best Produced. With those, you can nominate any of those four shows that I previously mentioned, Beyond the Bell, Elite Force, Running the Ropes, or Wrestling News Live, for those. But you can only nominate one of those shows for the People's Choice and Best Produced. You can't do multiple ones for it. But as I say, Culture and Arts, Beyond the Bell, Movies and Films, Elite Four, Sports, Running the Ropes, and for Entertainment, Wrestling News Live, as well as your choice of those four for People's Choice and Best Produced. Hopefully, if we can, whether we get actually onto the list, it'd be pretty cool to see, I would certainly say.
Yeah.
Be in Worldwide Podcast Awards and then in Best Entertainment alongside probably crap like Entertainment Today or whatever they call it.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestling News Live, and I'll be like, yes. And then nobody from the mainstream media will give it any attention because they're kind of on themselves like that. I don't know, but yeah, getting your nominations. As I say, you've got about a week, and then if we do get nominated, you're going to have to vote like crazy. And hopefully you can vote more than once. I don't know, but yeah. Go and nominate the SNS Radio Network shows. I can't say it enough. I'll probably have to say it again, even though it'll probably be too late. But with that, I guess thanks to Sandro for joining us. I don't know whether we should make Sandro the a permanent part of this show, because, or I don't know. Sandro, do you feel coming in every week?
I got to be honest. As much as I would love to accept, I can't really say because of my work schedule.
Yeah.
So I can't really say as of now, but maybe I'll come by like once in a while, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we'd like to have you on as every once in a while to probably talk Lucha Libre and Japanese stuff, because to me, that's about as good as my pronunciation of any name that I've screwed up in this recording. Because, yes, it has been noted when we were in break that when I said Saturine the previous times, I called her Saturn or something. But basically,
something around there.
Yeah. Glory by death before dishonor or whatever. All that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was nice to have you on for the last three shows, Sandro, and yeah, hope to get you back again.
Yeah.
Randy, any final thoughts that, given that you're back, even with another person's laptop?
Well, yeah. Hopefully I can, well, yeah, I could probably still use this laptop more often. Hopefully I can get mine fixed. Or hopefully it can get fixed at all. If not, I am not trying to buy another fucking laptop. Well, I'm not trying to buy one to begin with, but nonetheless, I don't want this one going out. Even though it's been old, so its days are coming, the imminent end to that laptop. But I'm back, and nobody can complain about that anymore, that I'm not on there.
People may try, but they can't.
Well, probably just one person, really, but...
And so, with that, thanks to both guys, because I didn't think I'd be able to do this either, because I'm gradually recovering from... Because if we tried to record this last week at this time, I would have probably been like, okay. So it was handy to have both of you guys to kind of help me out, because yeah, I'm getting over it. So hopefully next week I will sound brilliant and not sick or something. But just a quick thing. Song of the Night, is dedicated to Mr. Hogan. And I don't think I'm even going to tell you what it is, because even if I told you what it was, it may be considered as too much description of the Hulk Hogan sex tape. That's all I'm saying. So with that, that was Sandro. That was Randy. That was Ashley. And that was your weekly slice of indie goodness. Catch you next week, guys.
In the deserts of Sudan and the gardens of Japan, from Milan to Yucatan,
woman's every man. Hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me, hit me. Je t'adore, ich liebe dich. Hit me, hit me, hit me. Hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me slowly, hit me quick. Hit me, hit me, hit me. Wilds of Borneo and the vineyards of Bordeaux, Eskimo, Arapaho move their body to and fro. Hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me, hit me. Das ist gut, sehr fantastic. Hit me, hit me, hit me. Hit me with your rhythm stick. It's nice to be a lunatic. Hit me, hit me, hit me.
Let us never speak of this again.